Blog Talk Radio.
Nowhere near us.
that's just how I do, do, I do. I'm young right now, but I won't be forever. I'ma live it up like that's true. You might wanna fall with me too, but I don't mean to brag. But I live a life that most can only dream about, yeah. So baby, come be my dream girl. Pick up fantasy and let me work out, yeah. Oh yeah. Tell me where you wanna go, what you wanna do. Say we living it like we own it, own it, own it. Then I'm on top of the world, what I need is you. Say we living it like we own it, own it, own it, yeah. Never too much, so just let the drink flow. Later on you can come through, through, come through. You know you're the flyest, we should call you your highness. Call me king cause I'm that dude. All you gotta do is leave your crew. Said I don't need a brag, but I live a life that most can only dream about, yeah. So baby come be my dream girl. Pick up fantasy and let me work out, yeah. Oh yeah. Tell me where you wanna go, what you want.
For a reason, seeds born, elders die, all things in season. These days, I'm just trying to get in where I squeeze in. Scratch that, I bust the game open till it's bleeding. That's that, D-Don Kimazi, Mau Mau Posse, guerrilla warfare, no man will ever stop me. Cause I run with tall black skinned Anunnaki, with 4 pounds of silver plated chrome in their pockets. But most days, I am non-violent, just don't cut my wrist and I remain silent. And when I speak, my truth weighs a ton. The scales tip as bricks of gold fall off my tongue. Your bars become stiff and cold as you succumb to the spit I hold between my molars for fun. Yeah, in all fairness, I get it from my daddy. MLK, baby, raised up on the avid. Offspring of ghetto life, crumbling brick and tragedy. They say that we have it good, I say that they imagining. I came from Ward 8, but soldiers stayed in war state. Anger seeped through jagged teeth, cause they couldn't get a warm plate. I made it out with a number two in the clean slate. A dirty conscience haunts me, but I shouldn't even be awake. Cause I was born in the 80s, just like my friends was. But now I'm getting texts about this for my overdose. And not that he was my closest friend, but I hold him close. He lived across the street in apartment B where they sold the dope. And yes, I'm going on a tangent. My mind is running rampant, and writing is the only way I handle it. The booth is like my cell therapy. Ask goody. My words like food for the soul. Let go of the past with them. And past cathartic, this is life saving for me. 14 years old, sliced and arms, but life gave upon me. But I had taken rest in De La Soul and brand new to say that hip-hop show me God is nothing short of purest truth. Show I do this to prove a point to my critics. Lyrics like fire, bullets, they seeking targets to finish. My limits have been crossed. Now I've made it my business to personally master these rappers and pack shit with a ribbon. Presented to children who don't know how to tell the difference between a lie and authentic or being alive and just living. I'm here to tell you my vision with IMAX precision. My storyline is still building, the climax impending. But I am the protagonist, but I come out winning. The top is a long way from my start and humble beginners. Finna get it like a champion, going after the pennant. Like mortgage pirates who siphon and rare gold off of your pendant. Swinging the pendulum, trying to send it back to the middle. When it's settled, I'm telling you, I'll have mastered the rhythm, 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 rhythm.
Me without a mic is like a bee without a snare. Don't you even go there. Tear into your ego. Freestyle with no rehearsal. Me without a mic is like a bee without a snare. Don't you even go there. Tear into your ego. Freestyle with no rehearsal. Don't you even go there.
Peace, peace, peace. Welcome to High Frequency Radio. You're on a Tuesday night call. Today is January the 7th, 2014. If you celebrate New Year's in January and not in March, Happy New Year's to you. This is your host, Brother Sharif. We're going to go in today on a couple of things. I need everybody to get their pen and paper out. The call-in number is 424-222-5250, 424-222-5250. If you have a question, comment, or concern, you can press 1 once you dial that number, and your question will be placed, well, your call will be placed in queue, and I'll be able to address any questions or comments or concerns you might have. Again, the call-in number is 424-222-5250. If you want to get on a high-frequency mailing list, I want to apologize because I believe I have been misrepresenting the email for high-frequency radio. It is highfrequencyblogtalk@gmail.com. I believe I've been saying highfrequencyradioblogtalk@gmail.com. So I apologize for that miscommunication. And yes, for that misrepresentation, it would be a violation under the FDCPA for me to misrepresent any character of information pertaining to this network. So I might owe Yousef $1,000 from that violation. All right. So again, highfrequencyblogtalk@gmail.com. If you want to get on my emailing list, you can reach me or us at the Lawmaster, thelawmaster44 at yahoo.com. thelawmaster44@yahoo.com. All right. Hopefully those of you who are stationary or at home or at the office are able to get a pen and a piece of paper. I'm going to start out with some information I've been requesting and asking for, and I've had a couple of diatribes and monologues on it, and I'm going to be going in and giving you my opinion and my two cents about certain processes and procedures that are out there that are the people are being harmed by. All right? I am a researcher of information. That's what I do. That's what I've done for years. Okay, I research things. I ask questions, no matter how ignorant, no matter how silly, no matter how innocent those questions may be, I ask questions and I conduct research on things that I speak about. Or if there are things that I haven't experienced, I will clearly notate that in my conversation and say, I don't know, but this is what I believe. Other than that, the information that usually I share with you is information based on my opinion, based on my experience, or knowledge. Okay, nothing on this show can be considered legal advice because, as you know, none of us on here are part of the legal society. We're not bar attorneys. Okay, we don't practice anything, especially law. We demonstrate law. We speak about law. Okay, but we are not attorneys on here, so we don't give legal advice. We give our opinions, our experiences, and we share the knowledge that we have individually and collectively. All right? I'm going to go in 1 minute. I have to get a little bit more information, but then be prepared because I think you're going to receive a good bit of edutainment, okay, and information about these processes. I'm going to go in. I'm going to step on a few toes, and I might offend a few people, but it's all meant for the better good of this nation and for anybody that is listening to my show. So please understand that that is my will and my intent, and I will always do so because on my show, it is considered truth radio. I'm going to bring you the truth, and I don't care who is offended by it. So stand by 1 minute. We're going to dive into the show, and we're going to get right into it. All right, stand by.
Baby squirrel use a sexy motherfucker.
Give me your attention, baby. I gotta tell you a little something about yourself. You're wonderful, flawless, ooh, you a sexy lady. But you walk around here like you wanna be someone else.
You're fine, so fine.
Oh, girl, I'm gonna show you when you're mine.
All right. Welcome to High Frequency Radio Network. This is your host, Brother Sharif. We are back. We're going to dive into the show. I'm going to discuss a couple of matters here regarding processes and procedures, meaning that I get an influx of emails from people either inquiring about these processes or asking about them or asking me how to execute them and things of that nature. All right. I don't know where this information comes from. I see it on the internet, okay, but I don't know, you know, exactly where it emanates from. So we're going to discuss it. Let me get a little rumble music here to get me pumped up because I'm sure I'm going to blow some eardrums with this nonsense, all right? So let me do it.
Let's get ready to rumble!
All right. Let's look at a couple of things. For the last couple of weeks on this show, I've been asking for information. I asked my listeners, and I have a good bit of listeners, all right, a week, at least a couple of thousand per week listen to this show and network, all right? And I've asked for information over the last 3 weeks for information about these processes and procedures. They're under different titles. They're called Accept the Deed, EFT, OID, bonded promissory notes, commercial liens, all these other affectionate terms describing these alleged processes. And I have an influx of emails from people that struggles to put a sentence together so that I'm able to understand it, minus the ebonics. And some of those questions from those type people are, can I go after the judge's bond? What can I do to go after the judge's oath? Things of that nature. Let me go into it. Let me tell you. Since I received two emails, and let me be honest with you. I received two emails, and I asked for information on anybody that's had success doing any one of these processes, okay? And I think I discussed a couple of weeks ago how one potential listener had done 6 or 7 processes, but then needed help, okay, because the debt collector was still there. And they didn't go anywhere. They didn't fall for any of those processes, okay, and they were still trying to collect the debt, okay? So I asked, what good were those processes? You weren't able to obtain any remedy or relief from them. And why did you do it? And did you understand what you were doing? All right? So I had two emails saying that, hey, you know, Brother Sharif, we did the, let's pick this one, the EFT process. And a group of us did them. 2 of them got through. And 4 of us, you know, got charged, arrested. And 7 of us didn't receive any relief at all, right? This is the response to one of the listeners, what they experienced using this EFT process, okay? So I ask the question simply, and I'll ask the listening audience this question, all right? I read an article 2 weeks ago saying that the TSA had some security holes in their overall security of the national airports. And it was discovered that passengers were able to get on planes with certain pocket knives, certain liquids that were prohibited, certain other things that just wasn't supposed to be able to get through their security. So that meant a TSA officer maybe was sleeping on a job, or that may have meant that there was sort of some attention that needed to be paid in certain areas of the airports that were weaker in security to allow these weapons to get through or to allow these type of fluids to get through and things of that nature. Okay? Now, I'm sharing that with you based on this. The fact that some passengers were able to get on the plane with these pocket knives or other weapons that can be deemed weapons, okay, the fact that that happened, does that mean that all passengers now can get on a plane with a pocket knife or any other equipment or tools or weapons or what can be perceived as weapons? Does that mean that everybody now can do it? No. What it means is that the TSA needs to pay more attention and focus to these weak areas so that no one else can be able to board a plane with certain weapons or what can be used as a weapon. Okay? I make that point to say this. If an EFT process or any other process, if one got through, okay, which we all know, some things fall through the cracks, okay? If one got through and somebody got a check or got a mortgage or got a debt, allegedly, discharge, but everybody else was subject to arrest, and then the rest of the people that did it never got any relief, does that make it a process? Does that make it viable? Does that really, is that progress? Is that considered progress? Would it be considered a process? Would it be considered success if one or two people got through and everybody else went to jail? I don't understand our thinking. I don't understand our rationale. Okay? Let me go further. I've heard of this process called accept the deed. I don't know who came up with that one. But accept the deed, and it entails some sort of process where you take the deed, let's say you have a deed of trust, and you do some sort of a filing, supposedly supposed to allow you to accept your deed, meaning that you have no more mortgage payments. Now, let me ask you a question, and I've discussed on this show in length with specificity the defects that are in these mortgages, mortgage agreements, deed of trust, security deeds. We all know they are completely defective. They absolutely make no sense. We all know these defects exist in these deeds. But we're going to do a process called accept the deed. Let me give you an example. If I go to Best Buy, okay, and you can go to Best Buy, and Best Buy has merchandise, let's say a TV on display for sale called distress property, okay, or distress merchandise, meaning that it maybe was a floor model, was a display unit. It's probably missing a remote control. It's probably missing a button. It's probably got a scratch on it, okay? They're sale merchandise. They're selling you that product if you would like to take it with its defects, okay? That's why they have it on the discount table, all right? So if they discount that product and you decide to purchase that product, that TV, missing a remote or missing a knob or with a couple of scratches, it might be a $1,000 TV, and they're selling it to you for $700 because of its defects. Okay? So the benefit you're receiving is that you're getting a $1,000 TV with some defects. If you can live with them, you can enjoy that $1,000 TV for $700. Now, if you decide that that's a good deal for you and you've looked at the merchandise and you determine that, hey, you know what, I can get around that. I can buy a universal remote maybe. You know, it's missing a remote. That little scratch, you really can't see it. I'm going to have it up on the wall. You know, it's really not bad. I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to purchase that TV with its defects. Okay? Would it be safe for me to buy that product in its condition? I might decide to do so. But when I take that merchandise home and I purchase it and I accept it in the condition that it's in, have I not accepted the product in the condition that it was sold to me? Can I then bring that merchandise back and say, listen, yeah, I don't want that. It doesn't have a remote to scratch on it. No, you're kidding. Like, we sold it to you like that. That's why I was on the discount table and not on the shelf. Like, if you want to pay $1,000, you can go ahead and buy a brand new one that's never been touched. Okay? The point of my example is that why in the hell would you want to accept a deed that has multiple defects in it? Why would you want to do any process that will accept a deed that is so defective that renders it void? Why would you want to accept that in any way whatsoever or put your signature on it saying that, you know what, I accept it? Why would you want to do that? I don't get it. Like, what are you getting behind accepting a deed? It just doesn't make any sense. You know, let me tell you what else doesn't make sense to me. We spend so much time on things, on matters that doesn't elevate our economic stability, that doesn't elevate our knowledge of law. We spend a lot of time running after these processes and procedures that are all self-serving, okay, that are all experimental in the least, okay? I don't understand why we spend years. Like, I've listened to all of this, you know, and understand me, and let me be clear. Nationality is important, right? But being poor is important too, okay? Being economically restrained is just as important, and there has to be balance in what we do. On my show, I focus on removing those economic restraints, those debt handcuffs, to allow you to gain some economic mobility and stability, okay? You can be as free as you want. You can come up with any system that you want, and I've heard them all, okay? We got gurus out there that says, you know, hey, man, listen, you know, and I'm going to go ahead and do a parody for you, okay? Hey, man, listen, what you got to do, bro, is you got to go out there, you got to get that deed, you got to get some purple ink, you got to take an impression of your butt, put your butt print on it, sign it in gold letters, send that to the Secretary of State, then send it over to Hillary. Hillary's going to stamp it, put two stamps on the back, dip it in some chicken grease, fry it for about 2 minutes, send that to the DMV. Then when it come back, you go to the court, and the judge going to get you off, dog. That's what's going to happen. Now, what we figured out is we messed up and we missed a step, because we didn't add the vinegar and the Old Bay sauce to it. So that's why the process didn't work, because the Old Bay and the vinegar was going to make it difficult for the judge to smell it, so they was going to dismiss our case. This is the type of nonsense that I hear, okay? Take your name, all right? Add an S to it, add a Bay to it, add an ill to it, switch it around. Put the first on the top, put the top on the bottom, the middle on the last, then they're going to throw your case out. But you might have 50 police officers walking behind you. I mean, when does the nonsense stop? When do we stop following the alien space procedures and just start learning what's in front of us, which is law, okay? You can be as savvy as you want on puritanical issues, on spiritual and religious issues, okay? And what I find with a lot of the leaders that are out there is that once they start getting into these puritanical issues and nationality issues and, you know, laws and the events that happened long before we were born, we can discuss those matters for years, and we have been discussing those matters for years. When are we going to come to the point to where these gurus say, I've been studying this for 30 years, and you still haven't found anything that works? 30 years? 15 years? 10 years? and you're still trying to fight to get out the system? When are you going to try to learn to work within the system and see that the system is defective in many ways and flawed in many ways to where you can make a good living learning the system? Where can I find these laws for these methods where you got to put some shake and bake on a document, put a butt print and a fingerprint and a knuckle print and some vinegar and some oil, and then your case get dismissed or your debt evaporates? What book can I find this in? We have to stop this nonsense. I don't care what they call you. You want to go ahead and you want to know how to go after a judge's bond, you need to figure out how to go after the debt collector's bond if you even know that they have one. Do y'all know that they have a bond? Why don't you call your Secretary of State? That'll be an easier task for you rather than trying to go in there and starting a controversy with the judge who is skilled and schooled in law. We're so attracted to secrets, secret society, secrets, period. From a kid, we always said, I'm going to tell you a secret. You going to tell anybody? There is no secret to the consumer protection laws that I try to educate people on the show. Anything I say, you can Google or go to your law library, and you can put your finger on that law. And if you're smart enough to use it, you can get some of your debts eliminated, which would allow you to have more financial and economic stability and energy. You can have all the knowledge in the world about religion, but you can be a broke, religious knowledgeable person. And what I find is most of these leaders that are out there, they're not financially stable, because when you get into these puritanical issues, you can talk for years and months and hours on out, and it consumes your mind totally to where you are frozen. You don't want to learn commerce. You don't want to learn how to interact in commerce. You don't want to learn how to have intercourse with debt collectors, with the system. We don't want to read. We don't want to study. But we want to print off a document online, a self-serving document, and call it an EFT or accept the deed or this process and that process and the barbecue chicken process and all these other processes. And every year, these gurus come out with a new piece of the puzzle. There's a new piece we forgot. We forgot to shake and bake the paperwork. Or we forgot to put it in the ground for 7 days, let the sun hit it, and then send it to the judge. When are we gonna grow up? These consumer protection laws are there. I can promise you, we want to waste all of our time focusing on things that, first of all, have no merit, not enforceable, or we're spending too much time on one particular arena. We have to have balance in our life. Sure, are the spiritual and religious topics important? Absolutely. You cannot move forward without that. Okay? But if you're putting all of your resources into figuring out a way to go to whatever man you want to say he is, whether he's a white man or a purple man or a Jewish man or a Catholic man or whatever you want to entitle him with, we continue to have discussions how we need to go to the man that we say don't have any authority over us and make him say he don't have any authority over us. Okay? Or we're formulating these documents and drafting them up, using a whole bunch of case law and a whole bunch of constitutional arguments and things like that when we're in a statutory court. So for the beginners that are out there, the people that just come across this information, be smart, do your due diligence, study, and learn the law first. I can assure you, if you're focusing on a traffic matter, all you have to do is focus on the criminal rules of procedure. If it's a criminal violation in your state, not all states make traffic violations criminal. If you study the rules of procedure, I can assure you that they miss several steps in issuing you that ticket. It is not hard. You don't have to study you don't have to draft a 30-page document. Just study your local rules. in your criminal rules of procedure. And you will see you can easily, in two pages, three the most, get rid of a traffic ticket if you are not in that regulatable activity. It doesn't take that much. I can assure you, if you have a debt collector coming after you, that if they sent you any type of Dunning notices or bank statements throughout that month, I can promise you that you have missed thousands of dollars since you were of age. And currently, every time you open up your mailbox, you have a potential to have some type of action against a debt collector that may turn your debt into an asset. Those are the things I focus on here. Once you start turning debts into assets, now you'll have more financial energy and stability. Because let me tell you something. When you are broke, the only thing we cling to when we're broke and depressed and our self-esteem is low, we're going to cling to religion, okay, and puritanical issues, okay? But once you start using the system and making money out of the system, which is what I teach, you will learn to become more comfortable with things because, one, you'll be able to now, because you were able to get rid of that debt collector on your mortgage, you were able to get rid of that credit card debt because you found some defects in the process, or you were able to write down some of that principal because they made certain violations while attempting to collect that debt. See, now you have money to be able to fund and open up these indigenous Native American schools that our kids need. Now you'll be able to have a voice in the commercial world because now you have something, you have assets. Okay, but you want to follow these kooky processes and you want to claim all your nationality and everything else and you want to put your butt cheek prints on these documents and hoping the judge is going to get rid of your case, or, you know, you want to challenge the judge's bond and, you know, you want to go right after that. You want to start a controversy and deal with the one person that can give your case merit or not, or that can give the debt collector merit or not. Why you want to attack the judge? If you learn the rules of court, your local rules and your civil rules or your criminal rules of procedure, you will be able to keep that judge in his lane or her lane at all times. I don't care if you go in there and you say you're a king emperor from the Moorish paradigm. They don't care. You got a debt or not? Did you pay your bills or not? We got to get out of thinking that everything that we do has to be tied to some process or procedure. You have to start with your economics and your spiritual. Those are your foundations. And then you balance yourself out with what information is going to be more tied to your daily activities. If you're an average person with average debt, meaning you have a car loan, you have a house loan, you have credit card debt, then you're a person that gets more bills in the mail, more opportunities to sue a debt collector or a creditor, then you get information in the mail about nationality or puritanical issues. What do you deal with most during your day? The puritanical issues can go on forever. I don't know what happened 2,000 years ago. It's my opinion and my belief. You have a belief. That belief doesn't take you 30 years to figure out. Believe what you want today, all right? If you believe you're Moorish, then be a Moor today. It doesn't matter what they were 2,000 years ago. Should you know some esoterical and historical information? Absolutely. But is that going to rid you of your debt? Show it to me. Somebody call in my show, 424-222-5250, and tell me how your puritanical stance on any debt situation has extinguished the debt. We have to learn how to operate in commerce. We have to learn how to read contracts. We have to learn how to have intercourse in the commercial world. We have to learn the rules of court. We have to learn how to appear in court, when to appear in court, how to appear in court, what to say and what not to say, what to do and what not to do. If you do that, the intercourse you're having with that debt collector will result in you getting an orgasm and not them. But if you don't read the rules and you want to read the spaceship stuff and you want to stamp your documents with tartar sauce and chicken grease and mail that to the Secretary of State and get a sticker for your car, go right ahead. We got to come together and start being scientists, going in the lab for a certain amount of time, not for 50 years. I'm an example that within the system are so many defects and flaws that I make quite a good living dealing with debt collectors. And that brings me to the next point. What are the conditions of these gurus that are out there pushing this nonsense? Are they living good? Have they discharged any mortgages? Well, if they did, and you had an average home in any state, let's say $250,000, let's say you're on the West Coast, the average home is probably $500,000, you should have $500,000 asset, right, using these processes, right? Or your nationality. But I don't think you do. I don't think you have the lifestyle. I don't think you have the economic stability for you to go out there and be teaching the people these dumb processes. Show me where it works. Show me your bank account statement. Show me some cases you've won. Show me some debt you've relieved yourself of because you're studying the laws. Anybody that's ever been arrested, I can guarantee you, from the time you were arrested, you experienced several due process and constitutional violations. I can promise you. Just like I also tell you that a debt collector can't collect the debt without violating most consumer protection laws. Now, with that knowledge out there, we'd rather go follow the alien in the spaceship that wants us to shake and bake our documents and put a knuckle print on it and send it in to the Secretary of State or seven other government agencies alerting them that we're idiots, we're fools, putting us on a terrorist watch list. Y'all better start studying and understanding what you're doing. And this is the problem with our nation is that we don't want to read. You got those credit card applications. Did you read it? Do you read the forms that you fill out? Do you understand the words that are on there? I see some of the documents that some of the listeners then sent me. They got a bunch of legalese, but you're saying you don't understand legalese. Well, if you don't understand legalese, why are you writing in legalese? You would be mad if they responded to you in legalese, right? Let's stay away from their language. Your language is plain English. Everything I teach on this show, even certain samples that I provide for you, are written very plainly. It doesn't take all of that. Learn the rules. Let me share why you need to know the rules. Okay? I went to court yesterday for a good friend of mine on an eviction matter. Okay, good friend of mine, they didn't want to handle the situation. They asked me to do it out here in Nevada, where I am. Right? So I said, okay, I'll do it. Went in small claims court or dispository court on a power of attorney. Okay? So went into court. The plaintiff attorney appeared and asked me, was I the defendant's attorney? Actually, I'm the attorney. In fact, I am. Do you have power of attorney? I sure do. Here it is. All right? There is a counterclaim already filed, a motion to dismiss already filed, and they can tell by the pleadings that they were dealing with somebody that had some knowledge, which is why they got an attorney. Initially, they didn't start off with an attorney. But once some documents were filed, they decided they probably need to go and get one. Okay, simple eviction case. All the laws were read and followed. I understood exactly what was going on. I understood what my counterclaim was going to be. I understood why the case needed to be dismissed. Got before the judge. And, of course, if you don't know the rules, you don't know how to handle yourself. I didn't go in there and say I was Moorish, I was this, I was that, you know, every jurisdiction. I didn't have any documents that was marinated in shaken bacon, vinegar sauce, and, you know, told the debt. No, I understand what a debt is, and I understand where I can turn a debt into an asset, and that's exactly what I did. It was a complete setup. The attorney damn near begged me to talk and try to settle. Now we're too late. We're into a counterclaim. You know, you haven't proved your debt. You violated conditions proceeding. Your notices was defective. I mean, he did everything wrong. And he had the right to do what he did, but he just did it wrong. This is where I am educated enough to capitalize and make money off of what he did wrong, what his defects were. The judge was trying all she can to give that attorney the benefit of the doubt because I just gave him the complete business. But being that I know the rules, I was able to keep the judge in her lane. She didn't like it. She couldn't do a damn thing about it. When I left out of there, the attorney and I walked out together, and he said, you know what? You did a hell of a job, and plus your suit looks a lot nicer than mine. And we smiled. It's nothing personal with the attorneys. I know we bash them a lot, okay? But it's nothing personal because they get paid whether they win or lose. They really don't care. Y'all be getting all angry with the attorneys. Don't get angry. Just make money. Okay? Me and him is laughing because he's not going to have to write a check for what his client did. His client's going to have to write a check. Y'all worried about what they call you, how your name is spelled. You need to switch it around. I mean, let's get real. I don't care what name you call. Look, you can call me a nigger if you want. And I have no doubt in my mind that over the course of years and much money as I made from debt collectors, that some of those attorneys and debt collectors probably called me some obscene names. Okay? I have no doubt in my mind that they have. But you know when they were doing it? When they were writing that check. That's when they were calling me the names. And at that point, I really didn't care. These debt collectors can afford you a great living and lifestyle if you just learn just a little bit. We're not saying on here that we know everything. Okay? But the only reason why I'm on this show is because I for what I do know, I know. And what I do know is every week I'm getting some checks from some debt collectors because they don't know what they're doing. And they don't think you know. And then if you depend on the legal society might cover that up for them. So what am I saying? You have to know it for yourself. You don't need the judge's bond. You don't need their oath. You just need to know the rules. And you can keep the judge in his or her lane. But when you don't know the rules, how do you know that you're being violated? Because you're busy trying to state what your religious preferences is or what your belief is. Who cares? Every debt collector I've beaten believed that they were right, or at least they alleged it. I don't get thrown off course with that. I laugh. I can laugh at any debt collector and attorney. I can smile. I'm never angry. I never have to go into puritanical issues. Just simply the law. I just had to get that off my chest because I've let it simmer for 3 weeks, and I've waited for information, and I got a lot of people I'm in contact with. This show reaches a lot of people. So I said, email me or call me and tell me about these processes and what success you've had. I haven't seen any. If you're getting locked up, you don't have a process. You don't have progress, and you don't have success. Just because one or two gets through don't mean the gate is open. Those of you that did OID should know that. I don't care what's right, right? You've had a politics on your side. And when you stand before that judge and you know the rules, those are the politics. Hey, judge, I know you want to give your bar member a little bit of latitude, a little bit more latitude than he's required to have, but I'm going to reel you back on that. Yeah, I understand what you're saying, judge, but you're not able to do that pursuant to civil rules of procedure, blah, 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 blah. Now, do you need the judge's bond for that? No, but what you told her is, hey, judge, I know the rules. I know what you can do and what you can't do. So long as you stay in your lane, everything is good. But if you step outside of that lane, my vernacular, my communications, my intercourse in court already gives her the idea that if I step out of my lane with him, my bond may be on the line. I don't have to say it. I don't have to ask for it. I know it's there. Many times we make the mistake by always asking for information or permission from people that we say don't have any authority or don't have any right to rule over us. Well, we always running down or sending some documents to some agency, government agency, asking for permission to do something or asking for them to acknowledge something, as if the slave master is really going to sign your freedom papers and let you leave. Now, I've seen a lot of slave movies, okay, and I never remember any of them drafting up any documents and say, hey, master, would you sign this so I can leave the plantation? No, when they were ready to go, they escaped. They just left. All right, they were gone. But we're constantly asking for permission, or we're constantly experimenting and putting ourselves in harm's way by putting us on some list saying that we're kookies. Or you sending that letter with shake and bacon, vinegar, and cheese on it, and you wondering why Homeland Security is knocking on your door. Bonded promissory notes. If you don't, there may be some justification for those things, but obviously the people who I'm talking to don't have all the pieces of that puzzle. Therefore, you're not able to execute those things until you are fully informed and have the knowledge, the requisite knowledge that you need to be able to prosecute those things. And if you don't have it, don't do it. And if it takes you too long to get that remedy or to get all the pieces, focus on something else that's going to move you forward and give you some economic standing. That's what we're going to be doing this week, Saturday. Priest Alicia and myself will be doing a webinar January the 11th, 10 o'clock a.m. We'll be showing you how to demonstrate in court, both utilizing natural law and the Bible, which all of you know Brother Alicia has already demonstrated and done so and walked out of a court facing 20 years in jail. So I would say that he's experienced in doing so. And myself will be sharing you the rules of procedure and how to demonstrate yourself in court, how to handle hearings, how to handle the federal rules of procedure and your local rules, and how to handle your debt collector should you find yourself in a courtroom setting having intercourse with a judge and an attorney. This Saturday, January 11th, 2014, 10 a.m., you need to go ahead and reserve your seats. There's a few left, okay? But you need to be at that webinar this Saturday. Our King Alicia will be on the show here shortly. Matter of fact, I think he might be already in queue. We'll bring him in shortly. But I'm going to go ahead to the caller lines and take a few questions. All right? And if you got any comments or concerns about what I'm speaking about, raise your voice. Raise your voice. The nonsense must stop. This is Truth Radio on here. I don't play. If information don't sound right to me, I'm going to vet it. And once I vet it If I can't put my finger on it or go to a law library or be able to see some enforcement or remedy using that procedure, it's garbage to me. And it's going to be garbage to the court when you go there. Priest Alicia, if you're on the call queue, press 1 so I can find you and bring you in. We're going to go to caller 404 in Georgia, 1948. Your line is now open. Do you have a question, comment, or concern?
Yeah, good morning, and I apologize. I just came from outside. It's 7 degrees here in Georgia. Hey, look, 2 months. I appreciate what you just got finished saying. I understand what you just got finished saying. I'm 2 months in default. This is going in the third month. I picked up the webinar, the first webinar. I've been going over that, and I don't know if I can speak about the webinar on here or how you want to handle that. Hello?
What's your question, brother? You said you need to repeat your question.
Okay, with the debt validation that's on the webinar you have there for the alleged mortgage company, because now I know it's a debt collection. After I submit that to them, it's after 5 days for them to give you an answer. And I'm supposed to, and while that's going on, I'm supposed to start my process at the court, letting the court know what's going on. I just need clarity on that. I know you put everything inside of there. I'm just not getting it.
Yeah, okay. And I see that you're not getting it because I don't know where you got 5 days that they have some sort of a time frame to answer to a debt validation request. A debt collector doesn't have any time frame. Do not get confused when a debt collector sends you a letter and he says, please dispute the debt within 30 days. Okay, that's for them. That's a time frame set for them so they can know how they want to proceed or whether they want to proceed. A debt collector does not have 5 days, does not have 30 days. They, long as they stop,
no,
cease.
I'm sorry. Maybe I explained it. On your letter, it says that.
Okay. I don't – now, if you're talking about 5 days, you must be – I don't know if you're talking about a debt collection letter or it's QWR. Okay. I don't know where you're getting 5 days from, but, you know, there is no – statutory requirement that they respond in 5 days. Now,
okay.
if you send out a QWR, they have 20 days, 5 days to let you know that they received the letter. Okay, if you're talking about a QWR, you got to read the letter that you're talking about. You have to read it thoroughly. Okay, but long as they cease and desist from making collection attempts and they go away, they haven't violated the FDCPA. You don't give them 30 days. You might ask them to, you know, validate within 30 days, but they might decide once you send them a debt validation dispute, they may decide to go away. Okay?
Yes.
And if they go away, we're good. No harm, no foul, as long as you stop collecting before you validate. But if you continue to collect and you haven't validated that debt, then that's a violation. Am I making that clear, brother?
Yes, you're making it very clear. It's not, brother. It's not you. It's me. I want you to make it clear. It's not
you.
I know.
I understand. I just want you to know. Listen, this is school, so I'm one of those tough teachers. So I want you to, when you speak, I'm going to always critique you on how you say things and where you say things. But I want that to be clear. There is no requirement. They can stop collecting. Look, they can stop collecting for 2 months and then obtain some sort of a verification or validation and start hitting you again. Okay, and you're going to respond and say, listen, I haven't received adequate validation. I mean, I don't know how you feel that this documentation or correspondence somehow supports some sort of validation of your alleged debt, but this is not sufficient.
So before I worry about all I need to worry about now is just sending them a letter, having them validate that, and don't worry about anything else right now.
Right, send them a letter, okay? If they're a creditor, you need to send them if you know for sure that they're a creditor, then you send them a QWR. If they're a debt collector, you send them a debt validation dispute. Once you send that out, you lay back and wait for their response. They may decide, okay, you know what, this ain't worth it. We're going to leave this guy alone. This letter gives us the impression that he knows a little something, and we just don't want to mess with it. And many times they'll do. I mean, my letters do. I usually, I send out a debt value, they're done. I usually get a letter saying, look, we sold that debt to another debt collector or returned it to the creditor or something like that. I really don't care what you did with it. But, you know, and then sometimes they'll continue to come after you if they don't feel that you're sophisticated enough or what you're saying is not clear enough, then they'll continue to try you on.
because you have one there. It's for you know, the debt collector, and then it's for the pretender lender that might be a debt collector and might be opposing as a mortgage company.
That's right. You need to determine before you send your communication out who you're communicating with. That indication is going to lie within the paperwork that you have. Okay, are you dealing with a
I apologize. And their paperwork says over and over again, this is a debt collection, this is a debt collection, this is a
debt collection. Attempt to collect a debt, has a mini Miranda on it. Right. So, I mean, then you communicate with them as debt collectors.
Right,
so you don't
want
to send a QWR. You just want to do a FDCPA, 15 USC 1692G, and say validate or verify the debt. Okay? And then wait for the verification.
All right, I'm going to send that out today, and I'll keep you posted. I thank you for your help. You made it clear before. It just takes me a while to comprehend.
Well, that's okay. It's going to take you. Look, I read things sometimes 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 times. And then next year I'll run into it again and read it again. I'll be like, wow, I missed that part. That happens. That's what school is for, brother. Hopefully you got something out of it. I appreciate your call.
All right, peace. Thanks.
All right, peace. All right, we're going to go to 412-1568, 412-1568, you're on High Frequency Radio. Do you have a question?
Always. Always good to hear your voice. And you always straighten out all the hoopla because, people say these processes do this, do that, do this, do that. And you basically put it out there. If you have a process that works, let's see it. And you've been saying it for 3 or 4 weeks. No one has come up with a successful process. So, the family need to go in the right direction. If these processes work, you know, somebody does need to step forward. And since nobody hasn't, and people are going to jail, and they're getting on a terrorist watch group, you know, we need to really learn statutory law as opposed to, you know, smoke and mirrors. But the question I do want to ask is, I think the last time one of these callers had called in is dealing with property taxes. And when they're assigned to an attorney for collection, they have to abide by the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act also. They make mistakes. And the question I'm asking is, say you owe X amount of dollars for property taxes, but they have like 10 or 5 violations. Can you use that as leverage to get your property taxes down? Say they say you owe $5,000, but they did like, I don't know, $10,000 worth of statutory damages.
Absolutely. That's called set off. All right? You have recoupment. Okay? And that's specifically what I teach, is that you might have a legitimate debt. It may be a $50,000 debt. The debt collector or the creditor might make, and they often do make, $25,000 in violations. So this is what I'm saying to you. You say I owe you 50. I'm saying you violated me to the tune of 25. All right, it looks like I got some principal reduction on the amount of debt. You want to work that out without going to court? Or do you want to let the judge decide? Okay? Not every debt you're going to get rid of, especially if it's a good debt. But if you don't know what contracts say, if we don't read them, if we don't know what the truth in lending laws are and the consumer protection laws, I don't care how spiritually minded and grounded or religiously grounded you are, you're going to continue to go out there in commerce and sign these contracts not knowing what the hell you're doing, okay? And you can have all the status and all the everything else in the world you want to have, but you're going to be liable on that debt, and you're going to be a debt slave. So absolutely, brother, you have to be able to know what that contract entails, what you're signing, what they can do and what they can't do. And that's going to give you some set off. And, of course, that's what you want to do. Look, this is what you did. You called me 20 times. You're not supposed to. It's a violation of TCPA. Look, I got to hold you accountable. I understand I'm still make my payments to you, but I'm going to have to sue you to get that money knocked off of the principal amount due. Okay? That's how you deal with legitimate creditors. They can violate. Absolutely. Did that answer your question, brother?
Yeah, well, the next question would be, now, when you send a debt validation to these attorneys and you specifically ask them, is this debt an assigned debt or did you purchase a debt? Does it make a difference? And what do you do when they refuse to tell you if it's been assigned or purchased?
Well, you got a right. Well, you got a right to ask any question of a debt collector. Did you? Was it a sign? Or how did you acquire the debt? If they don't want to answer that, then that's something you need to get in discovery.
Okay.
That's what you do. You got to prosecute. Look, I don't know. You know, I need to know how you came across the debt. All right.
Okay. Okay. Just one. I know you got some color. Just one last question about that. Now. You said you always look at statutory and see if you can find some law to back up what you're doing.
That's the only thing I do, brother. That's all I deal with is law that I can put my finger on, not the spaceship laws.
All right, well, listen to me. Okay, 31 U.S.C. 7742. Now, when it's saying that the obligation of the United States are exempt from state and local taxation, does that apply when they're making an assessment that you owe this on a tax?
Okay, brother, well, let me ask you a question, because, again, I'm glad you brought that up, because I hear a lot of the gurus do that. They talk about Title 15, Title 18, Title 31. Let me ask you a question. Do you have a private right of action to prosecute any Title 31 claim? Who is that reserved for? Do you have a private right of action to prosecute any Title 31 claims? Is there a private right of action? When you read that law, and I understand they float around and gurus spit those laws out, and it sounds real good, and you can read it. I mean, it's actually in the law library. But who can prosecute those claims? Many times it's the Attorney General. Many times it's reserved to the government. You can say it. You can quote it. You can say, well, you know, I don't owe the tax because Title 31, blah, 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 says that I don't owe. Right. But that's going to be a defense. You can't turn around and prosecute them on that. You can bring that up as a defense. Yeah.
That's what I'm saying, as a defense. If they're saying, well, you owe us this based on that, and you use it as a defense, well, you know, are the obligations exempt from state and local taxation? It's a yes or no question. Is it or isn't it? Because if you're taxing me on the obligation of the United States, and it's saying clearly that they're exempt, so that's why I'm asking the question. So is it or isn't
sure.
it? And, you know, you can just use it as a defense. Go ahead.
I mean, it's a defense to me, brother. But again, when you talk about Title 31 and Title 18, okay, not unless you talk a Title 242 case. 242, 243, I mean, you have to make sure there's a private right of action that you can take somebody to court and be like, look, you're trying to collect this tax from me, you're not able to collect that tax as an obligation of the United States, blah, 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 blah. If you can find a lawsuit out there, if you can find somebody that's prosecuted those claims and those causes of action and got remedy on it, then do it. But look for the track record. You follow what I'm saying?
Okay,
or if you got a tax person trying to collect and they subject to some defects in their letters, or they miscalculated or misrepresented or did some deceptive acts or told you owed $100 more than what you're supposed to. If you have those things, sure, you have set up. They say you owe $5,000, you figure they hit you with $6,000 in violations, and what are you going to say? Look, man, I'll tell you what, I won't even go after you for the additional $1,000. Let's just call it even. And go our separate way.
Thank you, Brother Tariq. Thank you.
All right.
You helped me a lot.
Thank you, brother.
Appreciate it.
All right, appreciate it. All right, King, Brother Lishua is here. Chime in, brother. I mean, I went into a monologue and a diatribe early on the show, you know, talking about these processes and procedures and, you know, all these, you know, accept the deed and EFTs. And, you know, you and I had some brief discussion on those matters. And we have this webinar coming up Saturday where we're going to go in and show people how to demonstrate in court the proper way, okay? And you know, you shared on the show that you and I did a few weeks ago, you know, how that was done. And 50%, I believe more than 50% of your defense was on natural law, biblical principles, okay? You didn't have to talk too much about your status because I believe they knew the way you walk, the way you talk, the way you breathe, and the way you demonstrated that you were who you said you were. Comment, if you would, please, brother, and tell them what you're going to be able to give to them this Saturday at the webinar.
Shalom, brothers. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Oh, good afternoon, good day, What's going on, Brother Sharif? It's good to be on the show with you once again, walking in this light with you, brother. I give all honor to my Father, Yahweh, and to all who are on this panel, who all listen to this show. Yahweh bless every one of you and all your travels and all your business adventures that you do, and to understand that they have put a, they covered our eyes with a veil over our faces so we would not be able to see what they were doing inside of commerce under the fiction. Basically, when you begin to study the first five books of the Bible, which is, they call it the Torah, those are, that's trust law, which means that they took all of the trust and they put it into the corporate terms of today. So a lot of times people read the Bible religiously, and they're not supposed to read the Bible religiously. The Bible is a book of wisdom, knowledge, and understanding of how to operate in commerce, operate and operate your trust. If you go back and read the first five books, you'll see that it's all about trust. They was doing business with each other. They was bartering and trading. They was in commerce. They was dealing with silver and gold, rubies, diamonds, and everything that we're dealing with today. So what they did with the Bible, they took all of the words out of the Bible and put them onto paper and corporate, and turned them into corporate policies, rules, and regulations, which is not even law. So therefore, when you go into these courts, you're thinking that these people is talking law, and they're talking nothing but commerce and equity. They're not talking about any law. Only, there's only one law, and that's divine law, law that deals with people. So therefore, if people would just look at these letters that they're getting, it's all fiction, it's all propaganda, it's not nothing that they, you owe anyone. So therefore, when you study John 1 and 1, it says in the beginning was the Word. So you need to study these words on these different documents, on these different bills that they're giving you, and begin to take them from being physical into spiritual. Then you'll understand the physical. First, you need to go back into metaphysical. Metaphysical means to go beyond the physical. So when you begin to study these things spiritually, you'll be able to see with your spiritual eyes. I can show you throughout the Bible that you are considered a trust, you're considered a surety. They try to make you the debtor of the surety. And, man, the whole nine yards. You know, when you get into that New Testament, people think the New Testament happened 2,000 years ago. No, the New Testament is right here today in America. And as I'm going over the shows, I'm going to demonstrate to you that you're dealing with the New Testament right this present day. So you were tricked and fooled, and you thought 2,000 years ago that Jesus Christ walked on the planet, man, and did all this. Man, that's all allegories, metaphors, semis, and many other things that you do not know about. If you do not know how to study the Bible, then you're going to be lost in the storm. That's why we get into these courts, arguing, fighting, debating, and not coming in there with the truth. That's how I beat my case. All I demonstrated was the truth, and I walked out of there. That's why I keep telling people over and over again, they're in here arguing, debating, putting their status on the record. Man, you don't have to do none of that. You need to learn how to know that you are not the debtor. You need to know how to govern your debtor in commerce, in business, so they will stop using you as the debtor. You are really the creditor, and I'm going to show you in the Bible that you are the creditor and they are the debtor. I'm going to show you that when you supposed to write bill of exchange right inside the Bible, like they did in biblical time, they wrote bill of exchange to each other, and they did business. Same thing you supposed to do today. So those are
and
the
let
things
me say
that
this. I mean, and I appreciate that, and that's what we focus on now. In case some of you don't know, and I'm sure you should know, our priest Elise, you are, okay, is not a guru. He is what you call an expert. Why? He's been through the fire. He's not telling you some process, some procedure. He's not telling you to dip your butt in grease and put a butt print on your documents and mail it to the Secretary of State, John Kerry, or whoever, Hillary Clinton, and then fry it and put some Old Bay sauce on it. This man has done been through it. He's done what he's telling you to do. He's experienced it, and he's come out of the lion's mouth using the principles he just aforementioned. All right? So this is not something he's tried out. He's not a scientist in the lab. He's not mixing up different experiences and procedures. This man has done it. He's walked out of a courtroom with federal charges that may have landed him in jail for 20-plus years. He was arrested with other individuals who caved in, which is what they expect us to do, which is what the debt collectors expect you to do when you don't learn the civil rules of procedure. Our priests know the civil rules of procedure. He not only went in with divine law and natural law, he also, if y'all didn't hear the show, you need to go back a month ago and listen to the show, he also was knowledgeable on the law that they were quoting, on their procedures. He pointed out the constitutional violations, the violations of due process, the violations of a speedy trial. He hit them with both sides. You have to have both sides. Okay, so if you want to listen to anybody, this is a brother you need to listen to because he's walked the walk. Many of the gurus out there that I hear, okay, they haven't walked anything. They're basically sharing with you thoughts of how they want things to be. Okay, I call them telephone tough guys, how they want things to be or how they wish things were and what they would tell a judge if they was in front of them. But some of those same guys were with our priest Elishua when he got arrested, and those are the same guys who's sitting in jail right now for 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 years because they took a plea. And our brother Elishua, I said, nah, I'm going to stand on my principle on divine law, and I know the law. And he was able to walk out of there with not one charge. Okay, not one. Now, we all know the states are powerful. They have unlimited money. Okay, and this is a brother that came out of the lion's den with no money. He didn't have an attorney. You understand? That's what you call somebody that's experienced, an expert, not a process pusher. All right? So I appreciate you sharing that, priest, and we look forward to Saturday where we can demonstrate and show people true puritanical foundational issues that one can stand on along with the additional knowledge of the consumer protection laws, or if you're in a criminal proceeding, the federal rules of the criminal rules of procedure, or if you're in a civil matter, the civil rules of procedure along with your local laws. And that's what this show is geared toward, and that's what it is about. So I appreciate you coming on today, priest. If you want to take a question or two or stand by for another 15, 20 minutes, that'll be fine. I understand you have things to do. I'm going to continue on and take a couple of calls, and maybe you can answer them and give me a little break.
Yes, I'll answer any calls. You know, I have plenty to tell them, man. You know, people don't understand Exodus and the book of Deuteronomy is very important when they're going inside of these courts and when they're dealing with the public and the private side. The private side is always divine law. The public side is always your estate, your trust that they're operating without your authorization and consent. This is the reason why Moses was raised up by the Egyptians. He understood the public side and the side of commerce of Egypt. Then he knew then he learned the divine side when he went up into the mountain and stood on holy ground. But like I said, when we get to that point this Saturday, I'm going to be showing them that there is a public side and private side inside that Bible that they didn't even know about, that they thought that they mastered the Bible. They threw their Bible down. Oh, I'm not going to study the Bible. The Bible written by the white man. I heard so many garbage, man. It's crazy, you know. And this is why we're getting our butt kicked in court and on the streets. When you pick that Bible up, that Bible, and you master those laws put a frequency and a vibration and a protection around you to where them people, when they see you, they know what you know, and they're not going to deal with you. This is the reason why after 7 years, everything that you owe, they wipe it out, because that's a 7-year vibration that Yahweh put on the planet, that if they don't clean your credit up, that he's going to start cursing them. And I'm going to show them what time it is why these people do what they do. But, yeah, I'm willing to take a couple of questions to give you some rest. And, hey, man, they can ask me many questions they want, and I can get with them.
Yeah, the way based on the slang, right now I'm turned up. All right, so I need a little break. So I'm going to open up this line for 818-3994, 818-3994, you're on High Frequency Radio. Do you have a question? 818-3994, do you have a question?
Oh, yes. Hello?
Yes, we're here.
Okay. My my mortgage was transferred 4 times already, and the last one I had was Chase, and I sent a debt collection, a debt validation, and then they transferred it again to another debt collector, and I have not sent a debt validation on that. Can I proceed right away to court using the 1692I, as you said?
You can, if you are knowledgeable enough, if you studied your local rules and your federal, your civil rules of procedure, depending on what court you plan to go in, or if you studied your state consumer protection laws and you understand the requirements in order to file a complaint. I do not recommend you doing so unless you have a full understanding, not just how to draft your complaint, but to answer and defend your case. So, yes, that is applicable to what you're saying, if they haven't complied with the FDCPA, but do you know how to properly draft a complaint, and do you know how to defend that complaint? Do you know how to defend a motion to dismiss or demur? These are the questions you have to answer. You can study the FDCPA. You can go out there on Google. You can get a lot of information from there, or you can get a PACER account, and you can look at other FDCPA complaints, or, like I tell everyone, if you have a good case, the FDCPA allows for attorney fees, and attorneys can take your case on a contingency basis, meaning that they see merit in it enough to say, okay, you know what, I'm going to go ahead and prosecute your claims, and I'll get the attorney fees because I feel it's a winnable case, and I'll get the attorney fees from the losing party. Okay, so don't cut out the fact that you can get an attorney, but what I'm saying to you is you better know just as much as that attorney knows to ensure that he's doing things properly, okay? And many times you may find that you might know a little bit more than the attorneys, or you might find one that really knows the consumer protection laws, and that's where he focuses his practice or his or her practice on, and he's able to do what he needs to do without any oversight. But you have to know. And like I tell everybody, these gurus that talk to you, anybody sounds good when you don't know what the hell they're talking about. You understand? That's why we have preachers out here. That's why we have other priests and things like that, because they sound good and people believe them because they don't know what they're talking about. They don't know what the person is talking to them talk about. Okay? I can lose you all day long on my beliefs. You might say some sound crazy, but if you want to talk to me about what's in my mind, it's going to sound good, but that doesn't mean you understand it, okay?
Okay.
That doesn't mean that it's enforceable, okay? So we need to know what we're listening to. But, yes, you do have a cause of action. If they didn't validate the debt, which it sounds like what you're telling me, if it was transferred 4 times, it appears that you do have a debt collector and not a creditor, okay? And you need to go ahead and, you know, either get an attorney, okay, or learn enough to be able to file your own complaint either in small claims or U.S. District Court.
Okay, yeah, because they filed a notice of sale right away, and that's what they're trying to do now, put the property on sale.
They're trying to do what? I'm sorry.
They filed a notice of sale.
A notice of sale. Okay, so they're moving to sell your property, right?
Yes.
Okay, so you're in a non-judicial state since they filed a notice of sale, right?
Yes.
Okay, so that means you need to be the one to take judicial action because they're not going to stop when they're allowed to sell your property in their bathroom or their office or their backyard or at their cookout, which non-judicial states in some cases allow. So you need to be the one to file an action and an injunction possibly to stop that sale. Normally, if you file any type of action, even a FDCPA action in small claims court, many times they will halt the sale of that property while there is pending litigation ensuing.
Okay.
All right?
Okay. One more question. Because this has been discharged in Chapter 7, and I have also claimed it as unsecured and non-priority in Chapter 7, And when they send the statement, they say that this statement is just for information. It is not an attempt to collect the debt. But then they proceed with the sale.
Well, let me explain this right quick because you're getting into lengthy questions. But let me explain this to you and the other listeners. Just because you file bankruptcy and you put on your schedules disputed, unsecured, you have to further that prosecution by filing an adversary complaint or a complaint to determine the validity of the lien. When you get a discharge from bankruptcy, that just discharges the obligation for you to pay. Okay, but as we all know, or you should know, that there's two parts to any mortgage transaction. Okay, that's a mortgage, and then there's a note. When you file a bankruptcy and you obtain a discharge, that discharges the obligation for you to pay on the note. But the creditor or alleged creditor is still able to pursue their lien claims, meaning that they can still foreclose on the mortgage if you let them. Okay, because, or they'll file within the bankruptcy a motion for relief from stay, which they probably did. Some of them will get strategic and not file anything, okay, and let the automatic stay go ahead and expire, and they just continue to collect the debt after the bankruptcy has been discharged. Okay, so there's different strategies that they employ that you have to be aware of. But just because you file bankruptcy and you spend $300, $350 on a Chapter 7 bankruptcy does not mean you leave out with property. There's many tools available within the bankruptcy court that you can challenge any type of alleged lien or debt. Remember, bankruptcy court is for creditors, not debt collectors. Per
okay.
se.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you for your question, and we're going to move on to the next caller. Let's go to 614-0622. 614-0622. You're on High Frequency Radio. Do you have a question?
Yes, Sharif. This is Debbie in Ohio. How are you?
Debbie in Ohio. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you. I'm very good. I've been listening to you, and I'm very impressed with your studies, and I appreciate everything that you've given to us. I just have a couple of questions here. Does the the Fair Debt Practice Collection Act, I know I'm saying it wrong, apply to debt collectors on hospital bills?
Absolutely.
Well, okay. Good. Okay. Now I have a lender question. My lender and my servicer are one and the same. So would they have taken the role as a debt collector if my note was securitized?
Okay, let me kind of break that question up. You said your lender is also your servicer, which I can understand in some cases they are, and you said they securitize the loan. Now, if your lender is your servicer and your loan was securitized, then your lender is not your lender, okay? Because if it was securitized, the securitization, the RMIC, has its own master servicer, okay? And then the investors would really, in essence, be the creditors for purposes of lending on your loan. So your lender can't be your lender and the loan be securitized. Securitization means that it was sold at some point, to someone else, the RMIC. So your lender, who's probably masquerading themselves as a lender, is really, if you want to look at it technically, a servicer. And your servicer is just another servicer, okay, for purposes of securitization.
Well, the reason why I'm saying this is because my loan was never assigned.
Who was your original lender?
Third Federal.
Who?
Third Federal Savings and Loan.
Okay. So,
Cleveland.
And who's coming after the loan now?
Third Federal.
Who?
The same company.
The same entity. So why do you feel that the loan was securitized?
Because in my mortgage, it has that language in there. A security instrument means this document was dated April 15, 2004, as a security instrument.
Well, that doesn't mean that it was securitized. That wouldn't be in your mortgage. Securitization is a performance that happens after your mortgage documents are executed. It's not something that would be within your mortgage document. So unless you have information or some correspondence from a debt collector or alleged creditor or alleged lender or mortgagee saying that, hey, you know, ABC 2010-123 Trust or mm-hmm. trustee for, you know, the REMIC purports to have an interest, then you can't allege that or you can't.
Oh, okay.
You know what I'm saying? You can't go on that. You have to have some information or you have to conduct or perform an audit to determine whether your loan was sold into the secondary market. And if you haven't done that, then you really can't make those claims. You can do it upon information and belief. You might believe that they were, and it's safe to say that most of them were securitized if you dealt with any major bank. And it's safe to say also, is that your original lender, are they still around, and that's the same parties coming after you?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But see, happened was, right now, I had did a modification with them because I was getting ready. They were getting ready to foreclose on me, and when they sent the foreclosure complaint, it says serve federal savings and loan versus me and my ex-husband, who's still on the loan with me. So, and I kept all this paperwork, and I, you know, that's why that's my confusion because it's serve federal. And I know that they service the loan as well.
All right. You just need to, if that's your original creditor and they're the same parties coming after you, you just need to send, it sounds like you may have a legitimate creditor in front of you, and you need to send them a QWR and just say you want a complete audit of the account, you want every payment, every debit, every first place insurance, escrow, you want a full accounting of the loan account, the alleged loan account from its inception, from the beginning. And then go from there. And then email me if you need any further information.
Okay, I appreciate that. One quick question. If I send that to them and they don't send me anything, should I still keep paying my loan?
I would always keep paying your loan until you're ready to take some sort of an action. I never tell people to stop paying on your loan unless you have the knowledge that I have or King Lishua has or anybody else. Unless you're knowledgeable, I don't ever recommend you stop making payments. It's actually better for you to go into court with some type of action and say, listen, I'm not trying to get a free home, which is, you know, one of the key phrases that they'll throw out, or, you know, I'm current on my mortgage, but I have a concern that the purported lender or alleged mm-hmm. lender that's before me may not be the creditor. So I need to do some discovery and maybe trial to determine whether they're really the proper party for me to be paying.
And it looks
better when you're current. Okay.
Okay. Okay. All right.
All right. Well, thank you for your question.
Okay.
All right.
All right.
All right. Let's go on to the next question. I'm looking for a question for while Alicia was on here. Maybe y'all can ask him some questions. All right, but we're going to take any question that you might have. Let's go down here on the board. Let's go to 913-7330, 913-7330. Do you have a question, comment, or concern?
Yes,
7330. Do you have a question? All right, let's go down to 269. 0837 269-0837, you're on high frequency radio. Do you have a question?
Yes, I do, brother. Sharif, how's it going, man?
Good, brother. How you feel? Got a question for
I'm
King
right,
Lishua?
Say what now?
Do you have a question for the priest?
No, it's for you, bro. It's for you.
All right.
Okay, my house, I got this house on land contract. Okay, and since then, they've sold it to a mortgage company. And I'm dealing with a mortgage servicer. Actually, I'm like on a third attorney. The debt validation letter that I sent out, I say they went way across that and did what they wanted to do. So does this work in the same perspective as a mortgage when I deal with these debt collectors?
Priest Alicia, why don't you go ahead and answer that question?
Okay. What was the question again? Can you repeat it? Because his phone was kind of...
Yeah, repeat it for me because it was a little bit unclear, too. So explain that for us again, brother.
Okay, I'm like on my third attorney, but this house here I got on land contract, and they sold it. First they transferred it, then they sold it, and I'm like on my third attorney. you know, but I sent the debt validation letters out, and they just totally looked over it. So I'm in the process of just taking them to small claim. But what I wanted to know is, do it fall under the same guidelines of the FDCPA when you're dealing with a mortgage? Is it the same?
Yes, it does, because yes, everything. The bottom thing is this: a lot of people run into these courts and they don't know how to file their paperwork. They don't know what to say in their paperwork, the proper language in the first place. And this is the reason why they went over your paperwork, because there was some language in there that was not appropriate and they didn't have to answer it. When your language is right in your documents, your rich brother, those folks going to answer you. They're going to pump their brakes, trust me. And when somebody say you owe something, it's just like Brother Sharif said, he was just telling the Queen, you, first of all, everything gets securitized from 1998. Everything starts getting securitized and monetized. But you have to learn how to get your stuff properly done before you jump inside these courts. Meaning, I don't play in state court. That's for people who's mastered at state court. I have another brother, he does that. And Sharif, he good at that. Meaning, I'm strictly federal court. Why? Because every MBS, which is a mortgage-backed security, falls under the FDIC, which is the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation. All of that falls under the federal. Anytime you want to deal with these people, you remove it from state court straight into that federal court. Because everything over $75,000 falls up under the USC Title 28, Section 1332. So therefore, you can take them into federal court, and that's when you begin to ask them questioning. You can question just one thing, brother. You can question their standing. Do they have standing? No, they don't have standing. See, and an attorney has to come in there with the real party of interest, which is under Federal Rule Civil Procedure Rule 17. The name of the real party of interest must present themselves in court. So you got to learn how to start cutting these people down to the chase and don't go stop going back and forth in these state courts, because in these state courts, most of you all in America don't have control of your estate in the first place. So that's why the state just go on and adjudicate you, prosecute your case, and move right along and foreclose on you. First of all, you need to take control of that loan. Stop fighting about the house. It's all about the loan. It's all about what you gave them. You're the creditor, and they became the borrower. But by you defaulting and not claiming the loan in the first place, bro, this is the reason why they continue to move forward. So I don't know what you filed in court, but you need to send it to maybe Sharif's email so he can look over your paperwork if he has time. And see, we don't know what you filed. So therefore, all debts fall under the Fair Debt Collection Practice Act. It's a debt, period. All of it's a debt.
That's right.
There was no real money involved. So, yes, sir, it falls under the Fair Debt Collection Practice Act, if that answers your question.
Okay.
That's a good answer. The only thing I'll add to that, brother, is that, you know, the FDCPA also applies to creditors. So it could be creditor or debt collector, and it mentions both. All right, hopefully that answered your question, brother. We appreciate you calling in, and God bless. All right, let's go down to True American Original. You're on High Frequency Radio. Your line is open. Do you have a question, comment, or concern? True American Original. All right, let's go down to Stay Dog 1. You're on High Frequency Radio. Your line is open. Stay Dog 1, do you have a question, comment, or concern? All right. Well, you know what? I'm sorry. I'm in the wrong area. All right. Let's go down to A Fidel Star. A Fidel Star, you're on High Frequency Radio. Do you have a question, comment, or concern?
Yeah, can you just give you Seth there today? Because I'm from the UK and I spoke to him yesterday.
Night, and today, Tuesday night, is Brother Sharif call. Brother Yusuf will be right on tomorrow, I believe.
Okay, that's fine. All right, because I spoke to him yesterday, I'm ringing him from the UK. Our system's slightly different over here, but big props to Brother Sharif and yourself and Elisha Yahweh. I'm really big into you and Kyle Yahweh. You got Civil Alert, and you lot smash it up. Listening to a lot of the stuff that you lot are doing over there in the States. I just wonder how I could apply what you're doing and learn some of the things that you're doing and then be able to do it over here in the UK. So I just wanted to put that to the priest. Is there any way of getting in contact with you, getting involved with your webinar so I can pick up some of this stuff but be able to apply it over here to the UK, because I know our carts are slightly different over here, but a lot of the fundamentals that Alicia talks about in the, because I know you're going up against priests, I know that it's the Jesuits, I know what's going on. You're not going into a court against a judge, he's a priest, and that's why I like what Alicia does, because he's going up against a priest. If everyone thinks that you're going up against a judge, you're not going up against a judge, the guy's a priest up there, because they're in a democracy. And in a de facto government, not de jure government. So people have to get the fundamentals of what's happened and how you've been put into a de facto government. And so they're impersonating public servants, judges, but actually they're going up against a priest. So when Elishua goes up against him, he's going up against them knowing who they really are. So that's why he gets remedy every time he goes up against them, because he knows what he's doing when he goes up against them. So I just want to find
that's
out where...
And I listened to you on yesterday, and you seem to be informative. I'm going to let you and our priest Elishua do a little intercourse, because both of you seem to be on that same intellectual level in terms of puritanical issues. So I'm going to let you guys engage a little bit, because I think you're pretty well-versed in that. And over in the UK, I'm sure you have consumer protection laws. But I'm going to let you and the priest a little intercourse on those matters, and maybe he can share some things with you that you're able to formulate over there. So go ahead, priest.
Oh, yes. Basically, he can write down my email address and get in contact with me, and we can talk a lot. Many people don't understand when they're going into court. I'm so glad, Brother Sharif, that you're teaching them the public side. So you get them prepared for the public side, but they don't understand it's spiritual, it's mental first.
Yeah.
You must get your mind right before you start dealing with these people, because they will breed fear into you, doubt and disbelief. And like I said, this Saturday I'm going to show them why they do the certain things at the certain days on certain time.
Yep.
Man, they just don't know. They think it's just all public law and just knowing one side of the law. Man, you got to know both sides of the law. Just like you mentioned earlier, Sharif, you must know both sides of the law. You think you're just going to go in there with these people and start battling them, and they're going to run. I'm telling you, it's all spiritual. It's all mental. It comes from the mind first. If you don't have a strong mind to go ahead and handle your cases, you're going to get smashed by Goliath. This is what David and Goliath was all about. Goliath was the major corporations that you're dealing with today. You are,
yep,
David, so you must be able to have the stone, that smooth stone, which is faith, and faith without works is dead. So if you don't do your work and learning this public side of this law, you're going to get collapsed. And what did David do? He shot the stone. The stone hit the forehead of Goliath. The forehead represents your mental. So you must, these people are attacking your mental first.
Yeah.
They're not attacking your body. They're attacking your mental. Once they break your mental down, they break you down. And that's why people are going to foreclosure. They worrying about hospital. All that stuff is all under the Debt Collection Practice Act. These people are using your credit. They've been using your credit since 1933. They've,
yeah,
been using your tax-exempt account, and that's that. You know, so get this stuff out of your mind that you owe somebody something. The only thing you owe is your soul to the Creator, and that's,
yeah,
it. You need to learn how to handle yourself more and better in commerce and laws of equity, and that's that. I'm telling you, this is all this is about. Now, if you think it's just one way, you're gonna see what Brother Sharif is talking about, what I'm talking about. So definitely, brother, you're going to write down my email address. I can give it to you, and we can discuss a lot of stuff, and I can show you, man, strictly from that book and how to apply it right now in modern times in commerce, period.
Yeah, because a lot of these, and that's what people don't realize. It's like when you get these, they'll send you a letter, right, and any random letter they send you from these courts, and it'll have in letters in big bold writing in red, and that straight away it's putting you into that root chakra. It's metaphysics they're hitting you with. It's tipping up,
yeah,
to your blood, and straight away, as soon as you read that, it puts you into that fear, false evidence appearing as real, which is what that dead piece of paper is. It's a dead piece of paper. It's not even real, but because you see that and you see the red writing, the reaction that gives you, that fear that it puts you in, you're already trying to lock yourself down. So by the time you get there, you're that full of fright. Them man have already won the war, because they've hit you with about 5 miles before they even get far. So what a lot of Kailia Way does, a lot of like people at Taj, a lot of people, when they send out a response, they know that 90% of people are not going to hit them back, and they're just going to car up and go away. But those small in the matrix that are normally the architect, who's the Jesuit Pope at the moment, the architect, he talks about that small number. Those smaller ones that respond back, they're the ones that frighten the people, the Pope and them, because you not only respond back to them in a way that they can see your work, but you hit them with the divine thing. So they can't come here and claim the holy sacraments and all this business, because, to be fair, we gave them everything they have today. We the ones who taught them. We were the first on this plane down here in Fair Density. They came after we did. So everything they've learned from us. The issue is we've gone to sleep, and now we have to wake back up and start to, like you just said, and take responsibility for your own soul, which is why self-preservation, first law of the universe. Because once you know thyself, the truth makes you free. When you know thyself, that's it. So that mentality you need to have, a lot of people in this society, because they don't see how you're being programmed into this density, they don't see a lot of what's going on. So the key thing for me is I've been finding out is how to deal with the priest, because they're going to claim holy sacraments, and Kyle drops it quite heavily, a lot of the stuff that you give. It's all about equity in their courts and talks, and it's giving them equity in that strange for remedy. And I see a lot of the stuff that he brings to the table, and a lot of the stuff all mathematically, fundamentally, it all makes sense. And it's been able to know the... So go on.
All right, brother. Yeah, well, we appreciate your diatribe and your monologue. And, you know, you probably want to pause for a minute. I know you're amped up. I listened to you yesterday, and you're very, 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 very serious and passionate about these issues, and we definitely appreciate that. I want to give the callers and the priests an opportunity to end off with his comments, and then we're going to go to the next call, all right?
Yeah, could you give us your email, please, then? Yeah, thanks.
Yes, let me give him his email so we can get to the next caller.
Thank you.
The email is, I'll spell it for you, brother. You ready?
Yeah.
It's doorpost. It's D-O-R-P-O-S-T.
Is that P?
Yeah, P as in Paul. P as in Paul.
Yeah.
Doorpost is D-O-O-R-P-O-S-T.
Yeah.
Number 4.
Yep.
At Gmail.
At Gmail.
.com. Yeah.
All right. Definitely.
It was good talking to you.
Yeah.
Keep in touch. Keep listening to the show. I thank you for your spiritual power. Keep working. Keep helping the people out over there. And we got to get to the next call because we got a lot of calls.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call as well. Much appreciated. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Indeed. We appreciate it. All right, we're going to go to the next caller. Let's go to that, back down to, I believe it's Virginia, 404-2642. Do you have a question? 2642-704.
Okay. Hey, good day. Good day.
Good
can
day.
You hear me?
Okay. We can hear you.
Okay. Yeah. The brother that's on with you, definitely I need to get in touch with him. I have a brother who I think he's in jail right now, but I think he's on a walk. I think he needs to get in touch with someone like him. And I'm definitely going to go see him on Friday, and I got your email, and I'm going to have him when he gets out definitely contact, because I think of all, he knows a lot, but he's lost, and I think this would be a way to help him get back on track by getting in touch with you. So I'm glad that the universe put me in touch with you all today. Sharif, the question that I have for you is, I have a friend, she's dealing with a summary judgment. You know, she did file her paper against the debt collector. She filed a lawsuit, and she's dealing with the summary judgment, and she's probably on the call now. She wasn't able to get in last week, so I wanted to try to see if, you know, this was for FCRA credit inquiry, where they inquired into her credit report without her permission, without consent, and of course the way she worded it was what I was talking to you a couple of weeks ago with conclusory statements, but she's trying to figure out how to handle it. But the question I had specifically before you answer that is, when they have to do an affidavit along with their summary judgment, you know, they're saying, well, I have knowledge, or I'm familiar with the records and the books and all that crap, they put in a declaration as opposed to a sworn statement. Is there a difference, and if so, how, and could she attack that from that standpoint?
Go ahead, priest. You want to answer that?
Well, dealing with it, they can't do a summary judgment. You can stop a summary judgment by telling the judge that the facts is not here all at hand. You know, if all the facts are not there, you can always object to a summary judgment. Was she in state court?
Federal.
Oh, she in federal court. So when she went to federal court, what did she enter in as evidence?
You know, when they pulled the credit inquiry report showing the inquiry that they made into her credit file.
Okay, that's not enough. Before you even go to federal court on the federal rules of evidence 1001 and 1002, you have to produce your evidence to show that the attorney who's representing the fish in the bank don't have standing. See, everybody, like I said, you must come in there and you have to come into the court and understand, like Cherie said, you must understand the federal rule of civil procedure or the procedures, period. If you do not, then they're going to do a summary judgment on you. But she was supposed to object to the summary judgment because the attorney is not the real party in interest. He's not, she has no standing because the name of the real party of interest is not there. So you can object to that just off the Sixth Amendment alone. You have a right to, cross-examine and face your accuser, which is your substantial Sixth Amendment right. Don't go on and say you violate due process of law. You have to say your substantial due process of law, your substantial Sixth Amendment to cross-examine and face your accuser. That federal judge has to recognize that because he's in federal court. See, under the federal rules.
Now, this matter, though, the attorney has made they're making an appearance, and they're defending their client, which is the debt collector. Their client is the debt collector.
Object. Anything the attorney starts talking, they object. Why? He has no standing. He's not the real party of interest. Again, you have a right. You have to enforce the federal rules when you come into a federal court. That's why you go into federal court. So since you're in subpoena, go ahead, Cherie.
No, go ahead. I just wanted to go ahead and chime in, because at the top of my show, the brother just said the federal rules of procedure, and he quoted you case law. He used the legal words, standing, capacity, okay? He didn't use the word vinica and knuckle prints on documents. He didn't tell you to mail it and marinate it in any special, Halloween juice. We're talking real language here. We're talking standing. Can that attorney speak for a debt collector without the debt collector being there? Is he a competent fact witness or is he counsel? Is he testifying or is he litigating? What is he doing? You have to be able to identify that. Is he providing hearsay or is he providing admissible evidence? And you heard the priest say admissible evidence. You heard him say the federal rules of evidence, okay? So these are things that when we tell you that's why I say that to come to this class, you need a pen and a piece of paper because you need to write keywords down and then after the show, study and understand what those are. But it sounds like, you need some help. Probably need to email us on the side and we'll try to give you some further direction, but we just wanted to give you some platform or some direction in how those things are supposed to be handled.
Okay, but let me interject because, in federal court, in most of the federal courts, when it's dealing with these FDCPAs and for debt collectors and FCRAs, you don't actually go into the court. You're litigating through paper. So
that's true.
So I understand the argument as, him not being a witness with firsthand knowledge of the facts and all that stuff. He can't speak because there's no evidence and all that. But
right.
This is
that's why I recommend that everybody out there, okay, and I know a lot of us say don't deal with the system, get out the system, don't study that, study your own language. What is your own language? What is the language that you have that you can go into a court and speak? What language is that? So, you have to study this language. I suggest that everybody take a writing class on how to write and draft a complaint. You can get that at any local community college, okay? And you need to learn how to write, effective letter writing. Any course designed to teach you how to write. Because as long as you know how to write and put pen to paper, you are the most powerful person on the earth. When you learn how to put pen to paper, okay, Not put some sauce and some saucy gloss on the document and send it to the judge and hope he can't smell it and he's going to dismiss your case, all right? When you learn how to put pen to paper effectively, you'll be able to relieve yourself of a lot of situations.
And I got to chime in.
Sure, and I appreciate your call. And you go ahead and chime in, please.
Yes, Sister Ed, you guys must please start studying Federal Rule Civil Procedure 12b-6 because they will. You have to state a claim on which relief can be granted. So therefore, when you begin to claim the loan and claim the things that you're supposed to claim, you can dismiss that attorney off the muscle. Study Federal Rule 12b-6, which means state a claim on which relief can be granted. If not,
that's right.
They'll dismiss your case under the 12b-6 rule because
always.
You didn't state a claim.
And it's funny you say that, Priest, because my last week's show, and those of you that are on the call today that did not listen to my last week's show, you need to go back and listen to that show. Because during that show, I read to you, and Priest, maybe you should listen to it, I read to them word for word a foreclosure complaint out of New York Supreme Court, which is their state court. And I read the entire foreclosure complaint against a defendant on a loan, on a mortgage, okay? And when I read that complaint, everybody thought I was joking, that this was not the contents of that complaint. And it was just ridiculous. I mean, and within the same paragraph, the plaintiffs were saying we're a holder, and then we're a holder due course, or then we might have been endorsed the note, but then we're not sure, but then we want the court to validate and state that they have a first lien position. I mean, it was an absolute joke. When you speak about failure to state a claim, it was a perfect foreclosure complaint that should be dismissed on a 12b-6 with your eyes closed. Okay, so
right.
I'm glad you brought that up, and I'm glad that's something we're going to be going into and how you demonstrate when you get there is just say, you know, I don't even know what claim. They haven't even stated a claim. And what is
yeah.
a claim? Explain what a claim is, Priest, because a claim is not, okay, on this particular day you got a mortgage and you executed an old mortgage in the amount in favor of the plaintiff in the amount of $200,000, and somewhere down the line subsequently you failed to render payments under the said mortgage. And that's what they say. Okay, you're telling a story, but what's your claim? You understand?
Right.
Is that a claim that I just said, Priest? No, that's not a claim. That's just a damn story. Where's the claim?
Right. Study claim. Go to your Black's Law Dictionary. Study claim. Go to your Bouvier's Dictionary, Law Dictionary. Study claim. Go and just study the word claim. Then you'll be able to make your rightful claim. An attorney representing a fisher can't make a real claim. See, all you have to do is go to Title 28, Section 1441. They cannot sue you in the name of a fiction. It's right there. That's why if you don't know where you're going and you don't know these federal rules and procedures,
Hold up, Priest. You might... Look, it's a lot of callers on the line, man, and you're not talking no alien spaceship. You're not saying to get in a space shuttle, jump out of it, land on the judge's desk, tell him where you came from, and hand him a document with some vinegar on it. You said what? You said 1441? Where do you find that? That's in the law book. That's in the law library. Oh, you can actually pull that up, and you can see what a person has to do, how he must perform in accordance with law. And you said 1441. And what did you say before that?
That's USC Title 28, Section 1441, which means they cannot sue you in the name of. Yes,
that's
they
right.
They can't sue you in the name of a fiction. Period.
Okay, how many of us are going to look that up and read it? All right, let's go on to the next question.
All right.
Let's go on to the next question. 856-8317, 856-8317. You're on a high-frequency radio. Do you have a question?
Islam,
peace.
Yeah, what's going on? This is Brother Q calling from New Jersey. I have a couple questions. One of the questions I have is I was helping out a brother with he had a car in another person's name. The lady went to go take a lien out on the title. And what we did, I had him, you know, get a court order stating that, you know, he got his license and everything like that back. So I had him get a court order, and he proved under a reasonable doubt We proved under reasonable doubt that he was the original owner of the car, that he brought the car. You know, we proved it through bank statements, etc., so on and so forth. So the judge gave him a court order. Then we got a then we got a police report stating that, you know, the car was lawfully his, and, you know, that it was taken, that the loan was taken out fraudulently. Then a payday loan company has a lien on the vehicle, and they've been trying to take the vehicle from him. So I was wondering, like, how to go about doing that, because, you know, it's causing a lot of stress with him, and, you know, I want to aid him with that, you know, like the payday loan, like the body snatchers come, you know, and try to, you know, take the vehicle and different things like that. But it's, the vehicle is lawfully his. He has, you know, he has a court order. We sent the court order to the payday loan company. We sent.
Hey, what was
the
court order for?
Out.
Are you saying that? All right, hear me out, brother, because I mean we got to keep the questions real short. So, are you saying that the brother got a loan? It was somehow a fraudulent loan done in his name by impersonation or some sort of identity theft? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. The court order was just basically saying that that he had no knowledge that the car was. That a lien was on the car, you know, that the lady was going out and taking the lien on the car, that he was the lawfully purchaser of the vehicle. That was what.
So
you're
saying that
stated.
He owned the vehicle and somebody else went and got a payday loan on the vehicle in his name?
Exactly.
Okay.
Because she, you know, the title was, you know, like people don't get,
okay.
He didn't have a license at the time. So he, you know,
right.
Said, you know, can you register the vehicle in your name? So, you know, I didn't know how to attack that.
Oh, so the vehicle
so
was registered
it, like,
in her name because he didn't have a license.
Exactly.
Okay, well, then she got a legitimate loan. If she was the owner of the vehicle, she went and got a loan on it. That's a legitimate loan. I mean, I understand that he gave her the vehicle, but he couldn't operate in commerce via driving, which is a commercial activity.
Exactly.
So he mm-hmm. transferred ownership onto somebody he thought was commercially able to indulge in commerce and transportation. So he gave her title to the vehicle. She took the vehicle title and got a payday loan on it. And then,
yes.
I don't know what you did after that, but you're saying that you filed a case, but did you file a quiet title case? Because people don't understand, you can file a quiet title action against on an auto as well. Anything with a title, you can file a quiet title action. I don't care if you got a title to a dog.
Yeah, I didn't.
All right.
Yeah, we didn't file. I didn't file a case yet. That was the process that I was going to do now, and I was asking
okay.
you, like, what I filed.
Well, brother, it sounds like you got a legitimate loan. Sounds like he's gonna have to sue her for the title loan. Sounds like the title loan company had a good title. They had the registrant and the title holder in front of them, okay, and they lent her mm-hmm. money on that title. So I mean, mm-hmm. you know, that's a good debt. Listen, on this show, understand, I'm a businessman. Okay, the priest is a businessman, all right? I do business with a lot of people. I don't want y'all thinking that, you know, somehow you don't have to pay your obligations if you have a legitimate debt in front of you. This is not what it's about. I'm about making sure that if you have a debt, that it's a legitimate debt. And if it's a legitimate debt and there's some violations while they're collecting that legitimate debt, that you have some set-off and recoupment saying that, look, you need to knock $5,000 off of that because you committed these and that violation. But also, if you don't have a legitimate debt, then my belief is that you don't pay anybody you don't owe money to. So it sounds like she got a loan from that loan company, from that title agency. They have a good lien, and they're not going to remove their lien. Sounds like you just need to make a deal with them, brother, and get that paid off, and you got to deal with the sister who got the loan. But I don't see anything defective about what was done.
They're not having correspondence with him, and the car is lawfully his, and that's the problem. Like, he's trying to, you know,
but you
get correspondence.
How is the car lawfully his? Did you change titles? Brother, hear me out. Did you change title and put it back in his name right now? Who name is the car in right now?
The car is in his name now.
How is it in his name and there was a lien on the title in her name? So how did he change it over? So he changed it over, but the lien is still intact.
Yeah, the lien is still in. Yeah, it's still in effect.
Right, so all he did was transfer ownership. So, yeah, so then he just acquired the lien, that's all. I mean, they're not removing that lien. You can change ownership and say, okay, well, I'm going to change, you know, ownership, But the lien is still intact. He needs to make a deal with them. He needs to bring them to the table. That's not their business that he gave that car to somebody else and she went and took out a loan on it. They got a good loan. We have to pay our debts. Okay, and that's just clear. I'm clear on paying a legitimate debt. Now, if you can maneuver and do some mitigation and some negotiations, you know, maybe they may accept less on the debt. But, you know, it's nothing wrong with debt. I mean, we create it. If it's ours, own up to it. Do better next time, but pay your debts off if you have legitimate debts, and do better next time. All right, brother?
It's long. Thank you.
Thank you, priest, brother. Thank you. All right, let's go to 313-6539. 313-6539.
Hey, brother,
how y'all doing? What's up, brother? How you doing?
Oh, sorry. Got one.
Go ahead and put that body wash on, brother. Go on, lotion yourself up. Come out the shower, man. And go ahead and get your question out, man. When I say intercourse on this call, I don't mean that kind, man. Don't be up in there in the shower, man, going off the Brother Sharif show, man. Going all that crazy stuff, man. Come on now.
No, bro. I appreciate you two brothers, though, man. I really do.
All right, man. Really, we love you too, man. What's your question, bro?
I have a question for the priest. Just as far as it's pretty simple. Like, I'm one of those brothers who got kind of out with the Bible because of just lack of knowledge of what it actually was and is, and really hadn't quite some years been studying in it because I really didn't know exactly what I was studying. So kind of now that I do, I would love to hear from you, you know, what course should I take as far as just diving back in?
Okay. Well, basically, you know, I teach what they hear from us, which was the name. You know, everybody calls the Most High God a different name, you know, because they didn't want you guys to know the true name and the power of the name. And we can discuss, like I said, you have my email address, we can discuss that. We have our Yahweh show 7 days a week, and if you need personal time with me, that's what the priest does. I deal with personal time. I don't mind teaching you metaphysically what's going on. I can teach you metaphysically what's going on with the body, how to line that body back up with the universe. And therefore, when you go into the course, man, they don't know when I was behind that wall in 20 months, they didn't do nothing but make me meditate and get more deep into myself and understand what they were doing inside of these documentations. You know, I had time to meditate. I had time to study their theories and all their things. So when it was time for me to go to court, I had no fear, doubt, disbelief. That's why they didn't show you all when I was on TV in my orange, I had them Orange County blues on. I told them, are you ready for me, you know? And she's like, well, are you ready for trial? I said, are you ready for trial, you know? So they didn't show you all that clip, you know. I was letting them folks know I'm ready, I'm here. So, you know, I definitely can show you how to dive back into that book from the beginning to the end and show you how to use it in modern times today. There's a lot of things inside that book that we don't apply, and that's why we're economically destroyed in this country, because we're not applying the principles of that Bible. And if we get back to just applying just some of the principles, man, we can come out of a lot of economical distress we're in. If you look at your communities have all these abandoned properties in them, all these abandoned things in there. Man, if you can just go into your community, get community groups together, you guys can begin to do what the Bible says. You're going to inherit the desolation cities. It says in the latter days, the cities will be desolated. Look at these cities across the country, brother. They begin to be desolated.
Yeah.
Nobody's up to
I live in Detroit,
bodies.
So I know.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, brother.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah. You're firsthand. You know, you're a firsthand, competent fact witness to that.
In fact,
collapsed in Detroit, man,
right.
and that's just profound.
Yes, $18 billion in the hole, right? So, you know, we wonder why we don't have any money, because we don't bring ourselves together. According to Psalm chapter 133:1, says, oh, how blessed it is for brethren to dwell in unity. And that means you too, sister. So this is not saying you, yeah, when it says brother, it means you too, sisters. We must come together collectively as a people and pull our spiritual minds together and stop having all this division amongst ourselves within our own spirit. Your mind got divided. That's why he created the word individual. See, the word individual means in, divide, you all. You see that? So they individually divided us all. So you have to understand, if I say, I'll be giving a class on the power of the secrets of words. So when you begin to see words, then you begin to stop allowing people to distract you from me. Oh, I call them Yahweh. I call them Allah. I call them Buddha. I call them Jesus. Hey, man, do you believe in being good? Okay, let's roll then. You know what I'm saying?
Did y'all hear? I got to interrupt you 1 minute. Did y'all hear what the brother threw down? Did y'all hear the etymology? Did y'all hear how he broke down individual, individe you all? How many of y'all knew that? So let me raise my hand. I didn't even know it. Do you understand what I'm saying? But I do know that meaning of that word, that terminology is used in the Internal Revenue Manual and Internal Revenue Code. An individual, a person, and all of these other affectionate terms that we must understand so we know what kind of intercourse they're having with us. All right? So these are the words and phases that we need to understand. That's the education that our priest is going to be giving us on Saturday, January 11th, 10 a.m. You're going to learn more words, including how they individe you all. Keep going, brother. I love it.
Yeah. Well, I would say I appreciate that. And, you know, I'm definitely into my meditation. I'm into, you know, chakras. I'm into all of that. And I think this piece is, you know, the piece that a major piece that I got to go back and you know, redefine and break down for myself. And like you said, for others as well, you know.
That's right.
And,
well, we appreciate your call, brother. And I'll add to that, you know, I know we hear, again, my show is about the gurus today, the alleged gurus, the guys that say, look, you know, you're the creditor. You have unlimited credit. But if you don't know how to tap into that and execute it, I've had some gurus, some pretty well-known ones talk about this trust account that has billions and trillions of dollars in your name. But they walking around and they poorish individuals. They ain't Moorish. They ain't got nothing. They ain't got no credit. They ain't worth nothing. They can't even pay for a webinar. I mean, but, you know, they telling you all these different things, like you got all this credit, you got all this, the world revolves around you, but they don't have all the pieces. So when they do, when they put out these instruments and these documents and they do these shows and these webinars, priests, you know, they putting it out and say, oh, hold up, I found another piece to it. We had to add the shake and bake. Oh, wait, I forgot. We had to put it in the oven for 6 minutes instead of 4. And we've been doing this for 30 years, 40 years, 50 years, 100 years. When are we going to master something and we call ourselves masters and kings and priests and Moorish and kings? I mean, when are we going to master something and come together and demonstrate, such as you've done, such as I do, that you can get remedy, you can do it legally, you don't have to go to Mars to do it, you can stay right here and you can live comfortably, okay, with the rules and the laws and statutes and codes that are on the books, and you can make yourself a good living avoiding debt or turning debt into an asset. And that's my piece, and I'm sticking to
it. Well, I appreciate it. And,
Priest,
I have your email. I'll hit you. My name is, it'll be under D. Hines.
All right, brother, appreciate your call. We're going to go in. We got 36 minutes left. We're gonna go to another caller here. We loaded up on the call queue. Let me see. Let's go to 786-8852. 786-8852 on Young High Frequency Radio. Do you have a question?
What's up, my brother? It's Brother Dry Bones. How y'all feeling today? I enjoy the show.
Hi, Dry Bones. What's happening, brother?
Yeah. A couple questions I'm gonna ask Priest. Now, Priest, you've been to court. Most people don't realize the court is a Masonic structure.
Indeed.
The judge sits in the east and all the prosecutors and people going into there and not realizing there's other ways also get yourself known and be recognized. But my question is the priest. Now, I remember when Yuhei Wahe went to jail, and they took all his, every piece of property in the federal court. What happens, and how come we can't get a conglomerate such as you brothers and others like myself and others to get down and put a standard and an etiquette so we won't have all this misconception? Because what you said earlier, brother, I agree with 100%. We got brothers talking about putting your thumbprint in blood. I mean, it has frightened people even do this type of stuff. So I think what you talk about, a standard and an etiquette of how we can bring this about on a national base where brothers can get understanding. I hate to say this word, but I think UCC for Dummies would be an excellent book brothers like yourself to put together, because we are getting lost in different types of information here. And I just appreciate y'all trying to put it into a section where we can kind of easily grasp it, because there's so much going on down here. We got Florida foreclosures. We got brothers doing eminent, what's that thing where they go into the houses? I can't even think of it right now.
Eminent domain.
They're getting booed out the houses because they're throwing poverty instead of going to the black neighborhoods and get those houses and fix them up. They're going to the richest houses that you can go to in Boca Raton. I'm like, well, why don't you just go into the hood and buy some of these dilapidated houses and flip them? You know, but they don't think that way. They think about, you know, and then they get caught. And what happens is, and y'all, I'm going to stop, but I know you're out of time. It seems like they think of, when they do these things, the people in charge, they go one step above. They say, well, okay, they're doing this, now we're going to do this. So now it makes us have to come up with new strategies instead of trying to get together on the ones that we can possibly understand right away. So just a little information on why you think we can't get these things to go into etiquette and a standard would be something I would like to see you comment
that's
on.
That's good. I'm going to let Priest answer that question, and that's a good question, brother, and I really appreciate you calling in. And that's exactly right. We need to get on one accord. This is why I say they keep us divided on religious principles, spiritual principles. We can't come together as a nation. We can't come together as a people. We're all scattered. You know, we argue about religion. We argue about who was first, who was a prophet, who was not, who was this, who was not. Man, listen, let me tell you something. Let me tell you something. If I was first of all, I don't understand slavery. I wouldn't have never been a slave. They would have had to kill me. Okay, but if that was the case, it wouldn't take me long to figure out how I'm going to escape the madness that I'm in. You said, Priest, while I was locked up for 20 months, it only made me stronger. It only made me dive more into myself. I learned more about self. I was able to focus because, as you know, the superfluities of life keeps us busy on different tracks. That's why I don't want us following these crazy behind procedures and processes, wasting our time, because our society is good at deflecting, at taking us off a course when we're right on course. Attorneys will do that to you all the time. They'll know you have a good case. They'll know you're sitting on the right thing, and then we'll make the mistake of following their disco lights and start dancing under their lights instead of dancing under ours and saying, look, I heard all that, but you didn't answer my question. Do you have a case, or did you file a claim, or did you state a claim, or you didn't? But go ahead, Priest, answer the brother's question if you would.
Well, you know what? That brother made my head stand on top of my head. I'm going to let him know that when Saturday comes, I hope people tune in and tell other people to tune in, because I'm going to break down why Yahweh Ben Yahweh had to come on the scene in the first place, to bring the name back into remembrance, to let the people know what time it was about the name in the first place. And you got to realize that the Masons took the square from your father's circle in the first place. So you taught the Masons and stuff. So the Masonry that you think that you have is not the real Mason that King Solomon had. And I can go on deep into it, and I can show you strictly out of that good book. And when you look, study the first and second book of Kings. But the reason why all the properties was taken away, because the Yahweh Ben Yahweh was teaching on a straw man 30 years ago, and people don't even know it. If you don't have Yahweh Ben Yahweh books, then you're not going to understand what he was teaching and why he had to come on the scene in the first place. So I'm going to address that issue Saturday on why those properties had to be taken and why they had to do the things that they do. Now, check it, brother. Yahweh Ben Yahweh had a RICO charge on them, right? The same RICO charge against the federal government, right? Okay. Now, guess what? Another Yahweh comes in this time and beats a RICO case. And I'm going to show you who y'all are talking to. You don't know me yet. You think you know me because you heard a little bit about me. But I'm the same Yahweh that was here with Yahweh being Yahweh, and I'm still here in the second advent. So Yahweh showed you in the first advent to expose the RICO, because RICO is just a commercial charge. It's really no physical RICO. When you look up Title 18, Section 1950 through 1968, that's the RICO charge. All crimes are commercial up to CFR 72.11. Okay, so therefore, you're dealing with commercial commerce business. And if you're not part of the administration, federal government, you have no business being in there in the first place, because you're not part of their administration, okay? And you have to do, that's why I won my case, brothers, because I told them in the state court there was no victim, there was no injured parties. So they couldn't beat me, because there was never no victim, there was never no injured party, there was never an affidavit of criminal complaint from an injured party signed under penalty and perjury under USC Title 28, Section 1746. See, they don't want to tell you all what I was saying in that court. That's why they hid my case and my transcript from the world, because it was shut down, all the foreclosures and everything else they've been doing. So,
can't get no better than that, brother. Did that answer your call? We're going to have to go to the next caller,
but I
appreciate your call, man. And stick with it.
Yeah,
look, we're here for you.
Yeah,
I'm going to be here every Tuesday.
Okay, sounds good, brother.
Okay, I'm here every Tuesday. Sure.
How much the webinar? So I don't know how much the webinar.
The donation
is
$150
is
for the webinar on Saturday. Donation is $150, and
okay, cool.
The priest
all
will
right
be there as well as myself. But I appreciate you. Stay on path, man. Stay on course. Stand on your square. And we're here every Tuesday, and the rest of my co-hosts is there every other day beyond that. So stay on. I like your question. Honors to you, and we're gonna go to the next question. Peace. All right, let's go on to 713-6203, 713-6203 on High Frequency Radio. What's your question?
Yes, greetings to both of you brothers. My name is Adania, and I have a question for your guest, Priest. I would like to, if you can expound on the word bond servant. I think it's mainly in the New Testament, and Yusuf had spoke on it a while ago, and it really opened up to my eyes, and I went and did the research on my own, and it just kind of showed me this thing that we caught ourselves in has been going on for a long, long time, even with the 7 years that we find wiping out the dead 7 years, like you mentioned in the Old Testament. So I just really see if you can expound more on it for myself, because it seemed like that I was on to something. When you go into the New Testament and you see the word bond servant, bond means bond servant, bond man, bond woman, and we now me personally understanding what a bond is now commercially. So could you touch on that for me?
Yes, sir. Shalom aleichem to you, brother. Islam, greetings. Listen here. You was all, if you go back, that's why I say, when you go back to the book of Exodus, brother, you've been a bondman 5,000 years ago, okay? This ain't no new information. This ain't nothing new. All they did was take the knowledge out of the scripts, out of the Bible, brother, and turn them into corporation business policies, rules, regulation. When you study bondsmen in Egypt, the straw man is in the book of Exodus. The bondsman is in the book of Exodus. Man, I can show you, like I said, I'm going to demonstrate to you in the class what Moses was doing and how you, as the bondsman and the bondswoman, have to correct your documents, bro. When you make your correction on your documents, bro, you won't be a bondsman in Egypt anymore. That's why Yahweh being Yahweh, when the brother just got to talking about Yahweh, he created a book. It's called You Are a Bondsman in Egypt. People thought it was talking about Egypt back then, bro. Egypt is only a metaphor for America today. That's why when you study the word Jerusalem, J-E-R, in the middle of the world, Jerusalem is USA, and the M-E-L means the male shall be born in the USA of America. And if you study the book of Jeremiah, you'll know where you are. But like I said, I can't hold you up. We got a lot of callers, but that will be discussed Saturday about what the word bondsman is and how they said, the Pharaoh said, I'm going to let them make bricks without straw. And we're going to go in, bro. Like I said, we're going to go in. People think the Bible has nothing to do with what they're doing today. I'm going to show them that it does.
Okay, okay.
Right.
I got the email, the lawmaster at 44yahoo.com. I'm going to send
yes,
you an
sir
email. I send your email today. Hopefully I can get in for the seminar. So look for me Okay, so I'm looking for test number 8, and I'll send you one.
I will. Just hurry up, you know, because we're not going to have many seats left. But, yes, go on and get in.
Sharif.
All right, I appreciate
Sharif.
That call. Yes, sir.
Sharif, a brother named Brian Patterson, if he's still on the line, he's trying to get into class Saturday. Just sent me an email. So if
okay.
you can address him and tell him how to get into the class Saturday.
Yeah, just email me at thelawmaster44@yahoo.com, or you know, just give him the number. I'll give you the email address to forward to him. All right? All right, let's go up to 202-5140. 202-5140. You're on a high frequency radio. Do you have a question? 5140, do you have a question? All right, let's go to 267-3782. 267-3782, do you have a question?
Yes, Islam, how you doing?
Islam, peace, sister. How you doing?
Peace, yes. I wanted to know how long was the webinar was one question, and can you, if you can't get in, is this webinar different from the previous webinar that the two of you did, and what other question did I have? Oh, can I get it on DVD or CD or something?
Yes, and let me mention that. Let me go over something that you pricked my conscience about. Yes, the webinar will be different than me and the brother, me and the priest have not done a webinar together, first of all. So this will be the first.
Okay.
So this
okay.
webinar will be different than others. It will be how to demonstrate in court using divine natural law and then using the rules of procedure and giving you some comfort in dealing with any kind of hearings you may have in any tribunal. But let me also say it will be available after the webinar if you're not able to make it or the seats are full. But I want to explain this to the listening audience. Now, there are some webinars out there. I do them. Brother Youssef does them. Brother Savage may do them. But those webinars are our intellectual property. Okay? Please don't bootleg the information that is gotten from these webinars. You're not allowed to do that, first of all. If you got a webinar and you made a donation for that webinar, the webinar is for your listening ears or maybe your household. So please don't bootleg those around and send those around when other people had some consideration donated for that experience, okay? Let's not do that. But, yes, that webinar will be available on Saturday. How long it will be, I don't know. Brother, the priest is very passionate. I am too. I always go on the webinar saying we're going to make them 2 or 3 hours long, and they wind up being 6, 7, 8, 10 hours long. It all depends on the spirit. And the passion that's within the classroom setting, all right? And it all depends how we're feeling at that time, but you're going to get more than what you donate, for sure. You're going to get way more than you ever expected because there is passion and camaraderie and concern with us about how our people are advancing or not advancing. So that information will definitely be there. The time frame, I don't know. You know, we may stay within 4 hours, we may go to 7. It all depends.
Okay. One last question. When the priest had mentioned federal rule, I think he said 12, letter B and 6. So that's a universal federal rule. It's not a state federal
rule. That's
a
federal rules of civil procedure, federal rules of civil procedure, 12B6.
Okay,
so all you got to do is type in your browser, FRCP 12B6, and you'll get the federal statute that supports that particular civil rule, which is a motion to dismiss.
FR what?
FRCP 12B6.
FRCP, okay.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank
all right. Thank
you,
sister.
Thank you
Islam
for bringing straightforward information.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. You're welcome. All right, let's go to 317-8669, 317-8669. You're on High Frequency Radio. Do you have a question?
Yes. Hello?
We're here.
Hello?
We can hear you, sir. Do you have a question?
Oh, okay, peace. I was just wanting to see if you had any traffic remedies, like, you know what I'm saying, you know how we're going through, like, traffic issues and stuff with Barney Fife police officers that want to stop and harass people and stuff like that. What's your point of view on that?
my point of view is this, and I'll let the priest go into that as well, because I'm sure some of the things that will be performed on the webinar will help you with that as well. Look, we don't have to spend 30 years studying traffic or going through 30 years of studying to get a sticker on our car, you know, because we sent a document. Listen, traffic under the Transportation Act, okay, is a regulatable activity. Driving is an occupation. It is a commercial activity. Brother Savage, my co-host, goes into this. That is an area of expertise. Okay, it is another form of economic restraints that are upon us because they're able to do what they want within, or if you allow them to, write your tickets, change the rules, saying that you need your windows light or you need them dark or you need to have this type of frame on your tag or you need to have this kind of tag. Let me make you understand this, okay? Your automobile, your car, your conveyance, your whip, you don't want to define your merchandise or your possessions the way someone else defines it. We all have different religious beliefs. In our different respective religions, we name things differently. Okay? In different languages, different names that sound similar to what we use mean different things. So if you want to define your conveyance as a motor vehicle, then you will be subject to the Transportation Act or whatever Commercial Act relates to the occupation of driving. But if you want to name your property, and it's your property, and under the UCC, it is considered consumer goods. So your automobile is no different than your microwave, than your bicycle. It is consumer goods. It is used for household purposes. Okay? So in that respect, my belief is that you don't even have to license your vehicle, register your vehicle. It is consumer goods. So if you're not in a regulatable activity, then they can't regulate your behavior. If you're driving, if you have a commercial driver's license, if you drive a bus, if you fly a plane, if you work for UPS, FedEx, you got a truck, you carrying hay for your farm, you might be driving. But if you're in your conveyance or your car or your automobile and you're taking care of your private business, in my opinion and study, and it don't take you 20 years to do it, I'm not in a regulatable activity. You can't regulate my behavior while I'm under this umbrella of privacy or while I'm taking care of my private business. I'll give you an example that I'd always give. I had a friend of mine who is a tax expert, okay? He did an audit for a client, and the client was writing off, you know, certain expenses that related to him traveling to go see his mother. So he wrote off the gas, he wrote off his lodging, he wrote off a few things, and he was under an audit. And the IRS agent said, well, wait a minute. Was that in the course of you doing some sort of a commercial business while you're writing off those expenses? And the man said, no, I was going to see my mama. He says, well, you can't write that off, okay, because that's your private business. That's your personal, and he used the words, that's your personal private business. So if they couldn't write that off as an expense that was related to any commercial activity, then that does not tell you you have a right to some privacy, and that if you can't write certain expenses off, then how can you be held liable just by using your vehicle for personal and private reasons, handling your personal and private business? Okay, just because you see me come out of the woods with three fish doesn't mean I'm commercially fishing. I have a right to go and fish for myself, to forage for food. Okay, so would you regulate that? No, because I'm not grabbing up a bundle of 2,000 fish and cutting them up there on the beach and selling it. That's a commercial activity. But if I'm fishing for myself, do I need a license, a fishing license? No. So my brother, I will tell you simply in my own words, and I'll let the priest jump in on that, is that everything is about commerce. If you're in a regulatable activity,
then you are subject to the rules that relate to that activity. If you are not, then you better say you're not. Okay? And it doesn't take a 30-page document with a bunch of hogwash and some vinegar and barbecue sauce, and you got to send it to 18 different agencies to get it stamped, and you got to write it in gold and put your butt print on the top. It doesn't take that nonsense. Okay? Learn the rules of procedure. Learn what an infraction is. Learn whether it's civil or criminal. If it's criminal, then you need to go and do your studies. And you know what? You can do that a couple of days before and have enough of an understanding to be able to derail that traffic ticket if you just learn the criminal rules of procedure. Okay? Do they ever serve you with a complaint? No. The officer gives you a ticket. Can the officer serve you with a ticket? No. Okay? So, again, where are these remedies in the criminal rules of procedure? We have to read those. Many of the gurus will tell you, we don't need to know that. We don't come under their laws, and they don't have jurisdiction over us. Okay, let me know how that works out for you. Okay? And if you got some other remedy, call in. When you putting some barbecue sauce on a document and making it smell bad so the judge will throw out your case, but you might have 20 police officers chasing you out of there, but that's some sort of a remedy. Okay? Okay? I mean, I've heard it all. Well, you know, the judge might not like it, and the bailiff might put you out, or you know, they might threaten to hold you in contempt. Why do you want to go through all of that for a $50 damn ticket when all you had to do is learn the rules and say, hey, judge, I don't think, you know, I've been properly served. Due process has been violated. There's some constitutional violations here. The police officer served me with a ticket. A ticket is not a complaint. A ticket is what it says it is. It's a ticket. Okay, there's due process, there's an indictment that's needed, there's a complaint, there's an affidavit that goes along with that. Go ahead, priest, take it from there. I can go on all day.
Ooh. Man, that's wrapping stuff. I kill him in court. Like he just said, if you are not operating in commerce, you are not a driver, you are a traveler. That is your private household good, brother. Under USC Title 18, Section, man, I can go on with the federal law. You are not supposed to even have a driver's license in the first place because you're not operating in commercial capacity, okay? You're not a driver. You're not a taxi driver. You're not a cab driver. You're not a limousine driver. You're not a bus driver who's handling cargo of people and collecting fares. So just like he said, you can go in there with an affidavit, and you enter your affidavit in as evidence and a testimony to prove where's the complaint from the injured party, where's the victim, your substantial Sixth Amendment right. You have a right to cross-examine and face those who are accusing you of whatever complaint that they have that you did out there in commerce. They got to first prove that you're in commerce. They can't prove it because they will violate federal law. Okay? Then if these knuckleheads are asking you for money, you know how you stop them, brother? You always ask the judge or the prosecutor, do you have a valid claim on my estate? And if you do, then are you asking me for money? And if you're asking me for money, on the record, for the record, give me a W-2, a W-9, and a 1099 OID. I have to report this because this is taxable income. I kill them with that because you.
Wait a minute, priest. You said a W-2 and a W-9 and a 1099. Can you find that in the law library? You can find that out there, right? Oh, you didn't say to get on the walkie-talkie, the Maxwell Smart boot phone, and call up the aliens and have them send out a document. You said that asking for a 1099, a W-9, all of these remedies are available, and they are commonly known to all of us. So what he's telling you is, he's telling you where you can find use of those instruments, use of that law, okay, and it's in plain English, okay, not a process, not a procedure. He's telling you what laws are out there. Go ahead, priest.
And when you ask the prosecutor for that, 90% of the time the judge is going to sit in and dump it on the prosecutor. Oh, I don't have a complaint on it. Then you turn around and ask that prosecutor, I need a W-2, a W-9, a 1099 OID. You're asking me for money. And are you a victim or do you have a valid claim? So you got to have a claim. See, that's why I just told the sister on the 12B6 rule, state you fail to state a claim on which relief can be granted. So you can use that. You can use that on anybody. Do you have a valid claim? You gotta have a valid claim. And it has to be what? On the penalty and perjury. So I'm going to need your affidavit of criminal complaint or civil, because if it's not criminal, it's civil. So if it's not criminal, then you don't have an injured part. There's no injured part. And if it's civil, then you have to produce the contract that I have with you that I caused injury to you or your property.
So okay. Can you counterclaim?
Yes, you can.
Absolutely.
Because everything they did, yes, perjury. That's perjury. And the police officer that wrote you the ticket crossed over. You remember, you got legislative, executive, and judicial. The officer, police officer, not a judicial officer. So when he wrote your ticket on the side of the road, he exercised judicial power when he falls under the executive branch of the government, brother.
Okay. Thank you, brother.
I mean, brother, and the last thing I'll just say, and just look up the definition of a motor vehicle. I promise you, you know, and I drive some heavy whips. I drive some heavy whips now, and they heavy. I got some heavy ones and some light ones, but none of them is over 10,001 pounds. Not one of them. And I got some 28s and some 26s up on them. They heavy, but they still haven't made it to that 10,001 pound mark yet. So I don't think any of you got a motor vehicle, to be honest with you. But this is stuff that we don't have to go to Mars to be able to find out. All we have to do is read. All we have to do is read, people. You don't have a motor vehicle. You don't. I don't care how many TVs you put in it. It's not going to weigh 10,001 pounds. I'm sorry. I'm turned up. I'm amped up. But I'm just getting tired of us being taken advantage of over simple things, and we following the space cadets with all these crazy processes and procedures, man, and leading us down the road to where we stay stuck, we still broke, we still got a bunch of debt on us, they're still controlling us, they're still ruling us. And let me tell you something, when you at that low esteem point in your life to where you got nothing but debt and headaches, you're going to fall for these gurus, because they're going to make it sound, they're going to add a little spiritual element to it. They're gonna tell you, yeah, if you go ahead and if you put your handprint, you know, that's what God will want you to do. I've heard it all. And I'm sure the priest and everybody else on this call has heard it all. I'm sick of hearing it. And I put out 3 weeks on the show, priest. I said, look, if you had some success with these things, call me or email me. Before I went all the way in, call me and email me. I gave it 3 weeks because 3 is my magical number. And I gave it 3 weeks, and I got a couple of emails saying, well, one or two went through, but everybody else is in jail, and you still want to call it a process. Ridiculous. All right, caller, I appreciate your call. We got 8 minutes left. 8 minutes left on the live stream. We might go a little bit over. 8 minutes left. You want to call in before the show ends. We'll go a little bit over. I still have some questions left in here. I'll try to get to them. You know my goal is always get to as many questions as I possibly can. Let's go down to 917 up to New York, up to NY, 1024, 917-1024, your high-frequency radio. Do you have a question?
Peace, my brother.
Peace, brother.
I had some statements, really. I came in the hour or so when you were diatribing originally.
Yes, sir.
I was just going to pick you up and... you know, and concur with what you were saying. We need to learn the rules. My premise is always learn their rules and beat them at their game. I think that's
right.
What you're working with, and you know, I concur. And
I appreciate you, brother.
Peace,
and I know you in the fight. I know you doing it. So you know, we always get those gurus that tell us, nah, man, you don't need that, man. Go in there and throw your robe down, man. Go pee on the floor. Go do a couple of things. You know, the judge ain't gonna like the way you pee. Sound her running out the courtroom with 8 sheriff deputies or U.S. marshals following behind you. But then he gonna schedule you to come back and give you a chance to try it again. I mean, I'll be listening. I'll be like, huh? What did you say? All right, you know, brother, play the rules. I promise you they don't play by their own rules. Why? Let me tell you why. It's a very simple answer, and I don't have to call E.T. to get it. The answer is why they don't play by their rules, because you don't hold them to them. You don't
know them.
You don't know the rules. So when you go in there, the judge is not going to help you because he can't help you. If you want to go in there and lose your – listen, let me tell you something. When I was growing up in New York, okay, if you had the new Pumas and Adidas was out with the checkerboard sneaker strings, y'all had that. You know about that, right, brother?
Yeah.
Okay? Now, you know the brothers from Brooklyn used to always come up there, and they'll take your sneakers now. They'll vic you. All right? And if you couldn't defend them, you just got vic. I mean, and I had no pity for dudes that won't defend themselves. If you go in these courts and you haven't read their rules, you haven't read their regulations, and you know that these individuals that you're dealing with have some sort of a license, you give me anybody with a license. Any kind of license. I don't care if it's a barber license. I don't care if it's a tree license. Give me anybody with a damn license, and I'm telling you, I'm going to find somewhere I can make some money on what they don't do. Period.
Right. That's right.
Anybody with a license. Because if you got a license, you're restricted in many ways that I am not. So, I mean, just let me learn the rules. Give me the rules. Look, give me the rules. It'll take me 2 days before my traffic court case. You give me 2 days. Let me look at that and be like, okay, I'm going to go in here with these 5 points. And the judge, you know, I'm going to throw five at him. All I need him to do is accept one. But I'm going to throw five at him. That's pretty hard. I might throw seven so in case he likes to say no a lot. Well, I might let him say no six times, but he ain't going to be able to say no seven times.
Right.
That's right, bro.
Like you said, we don't read.
Go ahead, Priest. You can go on and jump in on that. I'm amped up, man, because I'm tired of hearing this nonsense. And I don't care who it's from, but I'm tired of us following these little colored balls that these people throw in the woods and have us chasing. And then these little knucklehead infidels that's running up behind here pushing this nonsense to the people, okay, is sitting up there, y'all paying them to hear this garbage. Or y'all buying their processes for and wind up in jail. And where they at when you get locked up? Oh, this works. Well, you know, this is the right thing. Well, we understand what's right. There's a lot of people in jail that are wrongly in jail. There's a lot of people in debt that are wrongly in debt. They didn't read the contract. They didn't understand. So the judge is not going to save you when you go to court. He's going to be like, look, if you're going to let that attorney vic your house like that, or are you going to let that attorney obtain a judgment with no evidence, okay?
You know what? On that note, if I'm not
that's
mistaken,
on you.
It's a Roman adage, let he who is ignorant stay ignorant. And that's
exactly.
What they work with. That's what they work with. Remember, we're in Rome.
That's right.
You know, we don't understand.
Exactly.
First, we don't know ourselves. We don't know what time it is, where we at. So that's our biggest problem.
That's why they don't take us serious. Go ahead, Chris. That's why they don't take us serious, because they know we don't read. That is our biggest problem. Is that? And I know people that email me and they say, "Well, what about this? Well, what about this? Where did you get that from? I got it off the internet." Well, let me ask you a question. Did you read anything else other than that document, other than the little magic posting that was on it said, "If you do this, you'll be mortgage and debt free." Come on, man. Y'all, come on. I'm being honest with you. Y'all are smarter than that. You really are. You're smarter than that. You just, I don't know. You believe in these guys. They look good. They sound good. They always going to sound good because they're speaking a language that neither you and I speak, nor can we research it. But go ahead. Go ahead, Priest.
Well, you know, I'm just going to address the brother. We're not even in Rome. We just have a Roman mindset. They have trained our mind to think like the Romans and, you know, and be like the Romans. And like I said, when I begin to break down Saturday what type of mind you have, then you're going to start seeing where you or who you are really. Then you know how to conduct yourself properly and right. But when another thing is that we don't read. We figure we want shortcuts, and that's what the us Asiatic people got to stop doing, all this shortcut stuff. Get your butt back into reading. We taught all the nations on the planet how to read and write, how to civilize their cultures, aggregation. I mean, man, the whole nine yards, and we got to get our minds and our children's minds back to reading and studying and applying, and stop listening to everybody who say that they did this and did that. Like I said, I'm battlefield tested. That ain't the first time that I was ever in court, and like I said, and I'll go to court again because I understand the operation of the court. They're trying to adjudicate your trust without you even knowing. So, hey, brother, just keep on studying. Tune into the class Saturday. Like I said, I got a feast for you, and I'm going to give you a lot of information that you need that you're going to be able to apply to yourself out here in commerce, bro. Just like Sharif said, he's right about everything. I'm tired of hearing all these gadgets, and I tried all their stuff. I didn't have to give no money, but I wanted to see if it works. I'm like, well, if it works, then how come you
are not using your credit? How come you not working on the private side? How come you have not bettered the community? How come you haven't taken your credit and your bonds and buy up all these dilapidated properties in your communities and start rebuilding for our people and for people at large, not just our people, but anybody that's need a job, man? You have a lot of people who are homeless people, not just us black people. We got white folks, Spanish people, Asian people. They live on the streets, under the bridges. I see it every day all over the country, brother. So, you know, we have to bring things back to reality. Since we are the gods of the planet, brother, we have to square this planet back off into righteousness, and it's going to get done whether they like it or not.
And that's what we're doing here on this show, on Brother Sharif's show, and the rest of the shows on this network. We hope that you're listening. We hope that you're applying yourself and you're doing your own research. I'm not about giving everybody answers. Sometimes I intentionally will not give you an answer because everybody just think that, you know, that the answer is what you need. No, you need to understand where the answer comes from, because no judge is going to be stupid enough to just have you have somebody write a document for you and think you're going to walk in there and walk out, you know, with a bunch of equity in a property or have a debt loss. You're going to earn it somewhat, and you're going to earn it by studying. You're going to earn it by knowing, having knowledge of the consumer protection laws and having knowledge of the local and federal rules of whatever court that you're in. That's the only way you're going to get free, okay? And that's the only way you're going to ever be able to start having intercourse commercially. And what I'm saying is commercially, you can have all the spiritual in the world, but if you don't have any money, okay, and I don't care how you define money, it spends good to me. I get checks in the mail from debt collectors every week. It spends fine. It looks good to me. If I can build me a community, build me some property, take care of my kids, take care of my family, educate the people, I'm good. Call it what you want. But we got to stop talking, all right, and start doing and start leading the nation in the correct way. Stop being individuals. I love that breakdown of the individuals, Priest. I'm telling you, I wrote that down in big letters.
I love that manifestation.
I love that. So, you know, we have to start performing, man, and stop, you know, and when we hear these crazy things, we need to crush it like a bug, okay? We need to inquire. The brother Priest said he tried it. I done heard of all of them. I done seen them. I done heard of them. Okay, and if you got one person that was in prison, why the heck you want to do something that may subject you to some crime? I mean, what's wrong with you? I mean, really? I mean, seriously, like, you know, Priest Alicia, even his brother that's called in, and myself, Brother Youssef, Brother Savage, we're all smart. Look, if there is a way that we can self-servingly dispose of some debt, I'm telling you right now, y'all wouldn't know it before me because I studied. All right? If it was some way for me to do it myself out of the comfort of my home or my office and dispose of any debt, y'all wouldn't even know about it because I'd have got it and I'd have gave it to the people that's going to use it responsibly, okay? But when Pookie starts sending me emails talking about, hey, yo, what about the judge's oath and his bond? I'm like, how about you pull your pants up first, okay? Learn how to talk. And if you got in front of the judge, what are you going to say? Hey, yo, I need to see that bond. I mean, what do you, I need to check out your oath. You feel what I'm saying? I mean, we need to stop this nonsense, man. We need to learn first, and you have to put in your time, okay? There is this microwavable society doesn't work. You got to put in your time and studying, okay? Let's stop the nonsense. I appreciate you calling in, brother. I'm going to try to take another call.
On the square, bro.
All right. We're going to do another 30 minutes here. Let me see. Well, good gosh, I got a lot of people lined up. Let's go to 317-8669, 317-8669. You're on High Frequency Radio. Do you have a question?
No, I don't. I was just on there, and I guess you brought me back in.
Oh, I'm sorry, brother. I didn't mean to. Let me go on, get out to the other caller. All right, let's go to 202. I'm sorry, we're not going to do that. I believe I brought them in. Let's go to 516. I believe that's New York, 6007. 516-6007. Do you have a question?
Yes, hi. I just wanted to find out. I have a student loan defaulted, and I'm, you know, they're harassing me about this 20-year-old loan. So should I sue the debt collector, well, it's a warranty service, so they're saying they're not under the FDCPA, and unfortunately, there is some law challenging that, so I wanted your opinion about services being under the FDCPA warranty agencies, guarantee agencies, regarding student loans, or should I just go back to the court that the judgment was at and put in, you know, which is very hard, a motion to vacate. I pulled the court papers, and to my amazement, there was no contract nor any banking papers in the file. So it's all a fraud, but unfortunately, they are garnishing me based on this fraud because they're saying I never answered the judgment because they served me at work, and I can't say that I didn't get it because they served me at work. I just do remember an income execution at my job. I never was served as far as I'm concerned, but they said, you know, being that they had my job and whatnot. So my question is, should I sue the debt collector for not being able to produce a contract, and or should I go back to the lower court try to vacate the motion? I mean, vacate the judgment. What's your recommendation?
Priest, were you about to answer that, or was that you or someone else?
No, that was somebody. I'm going to let you answer that.
All right. Well, student loans can be challenged. You know, I have a couple of students that have challenged student loans and done quite well, got rid of, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars in student loans. As I told you, when your new president came in, the president they call Black, came in, he knocked out the middle people, the Sally Mays and all of those. You know, they were always middle people. You're always going to have a middleman involved in commerce, okay, somebody that gets, you know, whether it's merchandise or funds, they add a little something to it for themselves, and, you know, they make the loans, okay? And that's the same thing that happened, and what was happening was they were losing a lot of student loans, and there is some opportunity for you to dispose of some student loans, depending on the condition of it, in bankruptcy court. But you, what the president did was say, look, we're not dealing with any more middlemen. Okay, so we knocking out all the Sally Mays and all those other entities that was doing student loans because people were challenging them and said they wasn't the source of the funds, and, you know, they were suing them in district court under, of course, the consumer protection laws, no alien laws, consumer protection laws, and they were winning. So your president said, nah, we're not dealing with that no more. Now your student loans come directly and are backed by the federal government. And you know we're going to get our money because we'll just take your tax returns and anything else you might have, you're going to pay them, all right? So it all depends on when your student loan was done, who's coming after you. I don't care if it's a warranty company. You send them a debt validation dispute and you ask them who the principal, who was the source of the funds, who's holding whatever notes, okay, on that, what's their name, what's their contact number.
While I did that, they garnished me.
Okay, well, you're not going to get that garnishment off you unless you do one or two things. You do a 60B motion to set aside for some reason. You said you were served. And this is a problem is that, you know, they get default judgments in 95% of debt collection cases because people don't show up. Hopefully this show is diminishing that statistic, all right? But, you know, you need
but
to do
I don't
a rule.
Think, I don't think – I really don't think they ever served me. They just served the income execution on my job, and now they have an affidavit of service saying that they served me. I mean, the paperwork, what I found amazing was that I pulled the complete file, not a banking piece of paper, not a contract. I was like, wow, you are garnishing me, and you don't even have the paperwork.
And I understand it, and I hear from your accent, because that's home for me, that you're from New York. Well, let me tell you what happened in New York. There was a big scandal with, I forget the name of the collection company, but some process servers as well and some attorneys. Had gotten locked
right,
up.
Right, because they
had served a bunch of, it was a sewer complaint, something. It was a bunch of service they did on a bunch of people and got like 100,000 default judgments saying that people were served and they were served at old addresses. It was a huge case. I'm talking about millions, tens of millions of dollars that they had to throw out all of those cases because the process service was in on it with the attorneys serving people at old addresses, not serving them, throwing the documents in the backyard. I mean, just, you know, or not serving them at all. So if you say you wasn't served, then that's a basis by which you can have that case set aside on a 60B motion. Or you need to do a BK, okay, and rid yourself of that judgment. Either way, you need to seek some competent legal advice or some consulting group that is familiar with those processes or those procedures, okay? So, you know, either you're going to go in and set it aside or you got to do a BK system to stop the garnishment.
What is a BK? I never heard of the BK. Oh,
bankruptcy
court.
Yes, ma'am. If that's an option for you, I'm just giving you the two options. The only two options, you're going to have to deal with it civilly or you're going to have to deal with it in a bankruptcy court.
Well, undue hardship, yeah. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you, dear. Okay.
You're welcome, sister, and good luck to you. All right, we love you. All right, let's go to 443. I think I went there already. Let me not do that. Let's go to Anonymous. Anonymous, you're on high-frequency radio. Do you have a question, comment, or concern?
Good afternoon.
Anonymous. Good afternoon.
How are you?
I'm well.
I just have a couple of questions. I'm dealing with like a foreclosure, and what I wanted to know, can a servicer or an attorney for a servicer draw up their own assignment on a mortgage foreclosure? And if they can, what makes it legal?
Well, that's a good question. Can they draw up their own assignment? They
yes.
do. Okay. But can
yeah,
they? It all depends where their power – are they operating under some sort of power of attorney? But usually these assignments, each and every last one of them, are mostly defective. And they are executed by parties that are not authorized to do such an instrument. So you a lot of times find on the document, and don't misconstrue it, you may find that the instrument is being filed in a county, but it says mail and return to the attorney's office. So you might have an attorney that has an alleged creditor that's going to do an assignment, and that attorney is going to be handling the foreclosure, whether in the form of a trustee or a debt collector, or if it's in a judicial foreclosure case, he might be prosecuting a foreclosure. But a lot of times they'll have the creditor will let the attorney know we're gonna do this assignment and we'll send the documents to you. So on the document we'll have the attorney's name and address for forwarding the instrument once it's recorded to go to them. That in itself is not illegal. But you will find attorney signatures. I had a case last year where the instrument was signed, and I did some research and some auditing on the case and determined that the paralegal for the attorney executed. And I had 8 documents that I put as a judicial notice to say that wasn't executed by somebody with authority. That was executed by the attorney's paralegal. Needless to say, about 4 days later, they dismissed the case because I was about, you know, to really set them on fire with that. So you got to look at your instruments. You got to audit them. You have to look at them and see, you know, exactly what language is on it. But no, the only people that are able to do assignments are mortgagees, creditors, and lenders, okay, not debt collectors. Priest, you got anything to add to that?
Yes, I do, brother. You are definitely right about everything you're saying. And the biggest thing to start cutting these people to the chase, you should do a forensic audit on your so-called mortgage and your Bloomberg screenshots. When you do that, you can show that it was securitized and monetized. Anything securitized and monetized has already been sold, and they don't have any – they're not the holder in due course, which means they also violated the UCC law. If you're not the holder in due course, they can't prove that you have the original promissory note, which you know they don't because it was already securitized. You don't never question them about the original promissory note. You always question them about where the security is at and do you have a license to handle securities. So therefore, you kill that chase right there because those Bloomberg screenshots is going to show where your loan is being sold at on the stock market, which falls under the PSA pooling service agreement, which means you need to go look up PSA 2.01 and study that and study the REMIC. Real Estate Mortgage Investment can do it, which means investors bought an infraction of your loan, which means they don't own your loan and the servicer cannot foreclose on your property and don't have any standing at all, period.
Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Right,
now, the brother gave you, you know, securities and exchange laws, okay? He gave you state law. He gave you federal law, okay? And he didn't tell you to call E.T. and have E.T. send you down some document with some ham and cheese on it, okay, sister?
Okay.
All right.
Thank you very much.
I appreciate you. We love you, and good luck. All right. Let's go to, and we're going to wrap it up soon here, King. Let's go to 614-0622, 614-0622. You're on High Frequency Radio. Do you have a question? Peace, do you have a question, 0622? All right. I think we're about done here. Let's go to 720-7383, 720-7383. Do you have a question?
Yes, I do.
How are you?
Can you hear me?
We can hear you. Go ahead.
Okay. I went through a bankruptcy, and the bankruptcy defaulted, and the house went through a foreclosure. It's under this. My mortgage was sold off. My original lender was Universal Lending. They sold it off to GMAC, which is now Ocwen, and they went for an automatic stay, and it went to foreclosure on April or May 8th, I want to say, and I heard nothing until about a month ago. They served me, and they didn't serve me, actually. They threw some papers in my backyard, just like you said, and I found them and showed up to court so that I wouldn't get evicted from the property, and I hadn't had any of the knowledge of your show or any of that until after I had went to court for the first hearing. So I got it set over, and I went and filed an affidavit of fact last week, which the judge denied, which I don't know how they can deny an affidavit, and then a motion for a hearing, and the judge denied that. So then I went back down to the courthouse today, and I filed an amended answer and a counterclaim for proof of claim, because I asked in open court for proof of claim, and I asked for that in writing as well, and I've been denied proof of claim from the debt collector, which is the mortgagee. And So I filed it stating that my due process was violated, and that I don't have the paper right in front of me. Sorry, I have a baby. Let me set him down.
Okay. Sure.
I didn't
All right. Let me go ahead and address your question so you don't get
okay.
too far in. Yeah, I heard you say
okay.
a few things that was not necessarily, and this is constructive criticism, okay? This is just
okay.
meant to enhance your knowledge, okay, to increase your
yeah.
knowledge about what you're saying. First of all, in bankruptcy court, you can't do a counterclaim. You can file an adversary proceeding.
No, this isn't bankruptcy
court.
I filed bankruptcy. This
okay.
is, the bankruptcy was dismissed, discharged. Then they went for an automatic stay. So the bankruptcy is
okay.
gone.
When you say went for an automatic stay, an automatic stay is something that is done when you initially file bankruptcy. There's a stay put in place so no creditors or debt collectors can move against you until your bankruptcy has been litigated, okay? So an automatic stay, you don't file for. You don't ask for a proof of claim. Either they filed the proof of claim, or if you're very knowledgeable about bankruptcy procedure, then you will understand that you can file a proof of claim for a debt collector or creditor, and then, you know, go ahead and utilize the other tools in bankruptcy court, all right? So the automatic stay is something that's in place throughout the duration of your bankruptcy, okay? Once you get a discharge, it only discharges the obligation for you to pay that debt. For unsecured debt collectors, that's no problem. I mean, because they usually don't show up to the meeting of the creditors because they know they're unsecured and they're just going to be washed out, okay? But the alleged lenders who usually file either a motion for relief from stay, okay, or they'll file a proof of claim. Let me just tell you, they rarely file a proof of claim. That proof of claim will murder them because it's under the penalty of perjury, and they do not want to file a B-10 proof of claim, you don't want to do that. They'll take the safe route and file a motion for relief saying that, hey, you know, court, you know, she has no equity in the property. You need to just go ahead and let us circumvent the automatic stay and proceed with foreclosure. And that's the first offensive measure they will take. But when I tell everybody, when you go through bankruptcy, don't think you're going to pay $350, file some schedules, and your problems are gone. You have to utilize, there are many tools in bankruptcy court, and you should consult a bankruptcy attorney, a good one, or someone with knowledge of that, okay, a bankruptcy preparer, so they can kind of give you what those tools are. But I'll just say this lastly, based on what you said, you know, you said you filed a counterclaim and then you filed a proof
of
claim.
Well, no, you misunderstood me. My bankruptcy was thrown out. Like, the bankruptcy's gone. It was dismissed. And so then they came after the property again. But I do have their fraudulent proof of claim from when we were going through bankruptcy, and it's fraudulent because I bought my house in 08, and their start date of payments is 2011. And so now they're trying to sue me for possession of property. And I filed an answer to that. And first I filed my answer, and they came back, and I denied all of their stipulations. I refused to sign any of their stipulations because they wanted me to waive all of my rights to the property. And all I agreed to is that I would not move out before the 12th of 14 at 11:59 p.m. And then all of a sudden I received a writ of restitution. And then when I went back to the court asking for proof of claim again, my motion was denied. So then I went back today and I filed
Let me interrupt you a minute. You keep saying proof of claim. Are you in bankruptcy court? Are you in a state court? Are you in small claims court? Are you in a summary court?
It's small claims court, which I asked for it to be moved to. I checked the box saying the amount of counterclaim exceeds the jurisdiction of the court because it's over $7,500. The property is worth more than $7,500. So I asked for it to be, I wish for the case to be transferred to district court as it was
You just stated
more
that verbally?
No, I checked it. I checked the box. I didn't state it. It's in my paperwork.
You have to move the court on some removal basis to remove a court from a summary court or eviction court. Once you let it go that far, again, I say the problem with us is that we wait so long to mount our offense or defense, you know, and you keep using the language proof of claim. Proof of claim is used in a bankruptcy court, not in a, you know, district court, you know. So your language was throwing me off. And you know, I'm a connoisseur of words, so I listen to people and I correct people. That's just what I do all the time because I don't want you saying the wrong things because those words will get you denied by the judge. What do you mean proof of claim? What are you talking about? Get out of here. And so proof of claim is in the bankruptcy court. You know, what are you talking about, proof of claim? Proof of what claim? They filed an eviction action against you. You got anything to say? Are you paying your rent? I mean, you know, they're going to be real cut and dry with you. And when you start using those words, they start to not take you seriously because you're not using the correct language. But it sounds like you got a lot going.
In my motion, I put that I'm not a lessee. I'm a homeowner.
Right.
So how can they evict me as a homeowner?
How can they evict you? Because you haven't done anything. You haven't filed a complaint to determine the issue of title. So you're in a eviction court trying to. Well, did you file a separate action?
Yeah, I filed three. One was I said that there was. I'm looking at all three of them. I'm sorry, I'm going back and forth through paper.
Did you consolidate the cases?
Yeah. It's all under one case. And
summary judgment court or in the state court? You got to listen to me because I know what you. I've heard it all. So I'm just trying to skip through to get to answers to your question. Is that case been combined in the state court or is it still in the eviction court?
I should hear back today with if they're moving it to the state court because I asked.
So it's still in the eviction court, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So you haven't, whatever you've done, either the judge hasn't made a decision on it or you haven't done enough to have those cases consolidated or removed. So you have to start an action, and you have to either issue a stay to the lower court saying, listen, don't make any decision about whether I'm a tenant or not. I have a claim over here or a complaint that's being litigated or adjudicated determining the issue of title. So you can't evict me when I got an issue about title. So you issue a stay, you do a motion to stay. The action there,
yeah,
while
nice.
Your claims are being – okay, great. Let me tell you another thing, and I'll share with you.
I listened to your show last week.
Okay,
where
good.
You said the validity of what I put, the verbiage I used is from your show last week, where it was for the validity of title was the actual
that's in,
verbiage
that's in
I
bankruptcy.
Used.
Yeah, complaint determined the validity of the lien. It's that's actually in bankruptcy court.
Oh, okay.
You would have something available you call a quiet title, which would be in state court. But let me also say, you mentioned Aquin. And Aquin, I'll just let you know, and Priest, if you got anything, just jump in. Aquin was, I speak a lot about the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. They're the new debt collector police. Well, they just got a consent order and judgment against Aquin, okay, financial, to the tune of $2.1 billion. Billion. Your Consumer Financial Protection Board hit them with servicing violations. I mean, doing the normal thing that they do. Now, Aquin is the ghetto mafia of the mortgage business. I'm just telling you right
yeah,
now, they do it all.
Yeah, formerly known as
okay?
GMAC.
They are straight thugs, right? So, you know,
yeah.
If you can't sue Aquin and win, you can't sue anybody. Aquin is, has the worst reputation. Okay, and they're the junior mafia of the mortgage industry. So you just got to tighten up on some of your knowledge. I think you need to study a little bit more, sister. I don't want you to be put in a position to where you're filing suits and you get hit with attorney fees because that can happen. I tell people don't go out filing lawsuits unless you know what you're doing, because you know if you make that corporation come in and defend themselves and they spend $20,000 in attorney fees and the judge realizes you don't know what the hell you're doing or your language is not appropriate. Or you're not making the proper pleadings, they can charge you with those attorney fees if you don't know what you're doing. So always seek competent counsel. If you don't do anything else, you know, seek some legal advice
okay.
or seek some consultation from somebody that may know or be able to steer you in the right direction. But even with steering in the right direction, you got to know who you're being steered by. So, you know, you got to deal with – I don't preach against you not obtaining legal assistance. Okay, all attorneys are not bad. All right, you there are some
yeah.
good ones out there. There are some good ones that hate what's going on. There are some good ones that's willing to lose their license for the truth. I mean, you have some of those people.
Yeah, well,
out
my
there.
Last one dropped the ball. That's what happened with the
and that happens a lot too, right?
But,
see, this is why we want
completely.
To teach you how to know the rules. So when they drop the ball, you just make the ball kind of outline with a bunch of money saying, you know, you dropped that ball on that, right? And I'm cool with that. You fumbled it, but you just got to pay. You got insurance, don't you? Right, of course you do. All right. Well, it's malpractice, right? Okay. All right, Priest, you got anything to add to that?
No. Basically, like you said, I got plenty of case laws on Aquin. Aquin getting sued left and right. Like you said, Aquin has no standing, and they can't foreclose on your property. So, she can email you or email me. I'll send those case laws over showing Aquin got stomped in the ground and Aquin has no standing with you at all, period.
All right, great. All right, sister,
okay.
Well, thank you for your call. I'm going to try to get one more call in.
Okay.
All right, thank you. All right, let's go to 818 West Coast, West Side, 3994, 818-3994. Do you have a question?
I already did. I was done.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you. I'm sorry. All right. Let's go to 818-7930. 818-7930. Do you have a question?
Yes. Hello.
All right, sister. Yes. Do you have a question?
Yes. Hi. I had a girlfriend who had called in earlier for me because it's kind of been hard for me to actually get through on the line because there's so many calls. But anyway. To make a long story short, I filed a claim, and it is in the United States District Court. So they filed a summary judgment on me. I'm not really sure. I know that I need to, of course, oppose the summary judgment. And I was just wondering, what would your suggestions be in that case?
All right, this is going to be the last question. Priest, I want you to go in, and I want you to talk about a little bit about summary judgment. But I want you to talk a little bit about, and if you would, proffer us a diatribe on the use of the proper use of affidavits. Because the other caller said that, you know, I put an affidavit a fact, and, you know, we misuse affidavits, and we're so accustomed in this society to always sign an affidavit for these artificial entities. Anything you do, if you file a dispute on your credit card, they want to send you an affidavit. I don't fill out any affidavits for any artificial entities. You won't fill out an affidavit. If you send me a bill, send me an affidavit. We shouldn't be filling out or signing affidavits for people that we, or if you want to believe the gurus, we're the walking credit card. So why are we filling out, signing affidavits, misusing affidavits, and what's the proper use of an affidavit, if you would, Priest? Please explain that to the listeners.
Okay, the reason why her affidavit got kicked out of court because she did not enter her affidavit in as a testimony and evidence. That's why you got kicked out. And remember, if you file a motion, they don't have to answer a motion because a motion represents the fiction world. So they can deny your motion because you're not an attorney. So they can deny your motion. You're supposed to ask the judge, have you received my affidavit? Yes, I have. Well, I'm entering in as evidence and a testimony. Woof! Now you would have put your feet on his neck. Okay? Then you should have asked the attorney that where's your affidavit with the bill showing that this entity that you're representing signed this affidavit under penalty of perjury that it owns this property. Stop going with this back and forth stuff and get straight to the point with these people. That's how you kill them. Okay. That's what an affidavit is. You enter it in as evidence and a testimony. Bottom line. You don't.
And let me tie that in, Priest, because you did that on your case. When they had you locked up for the RICO charges, you said, look, if y'all could provide one competent fact witness or one injured party that said that me taking this property injured them financially or any other way, let them show up. You said throughout those 2 years and all those charges that they put on you and the property that you lawfully obtained, you're saying that not one person came in there with an affidavit. They couldn't even scrounge up a robo-signer, and we all know they're fluent out here. They didn't even come to the priest with a robo-signer or a robo-sign affidavit or an affidavit that was from somebody else from another world. They didn't even try you with that, did they, priest?
No, they did not, because that's what the first thing I beat them with is, see, that's my case, people, if you're listening, there's a case that John Melvin is trying, the same sovereign, he calling a sovereign citizen, he's trying the same RICO case. He was kicked out of DeKalb County because he lost against us, and he lost his judgeship. He was getting ready to be a judge in Gwinnett County, so he lost all of that on that trial because, one, he could not produce any injured parties, any victims with an affidavit of criminal complaint from anybody signed under penalty of perjury on the USC Title 28, Section 1746, okay? I'm quoting you law. I said, if you can produce one criminal, I looked through my whole discovery package, which was 1,000 pages. I looked through the discovery package. There was not one victim, not one injured party, not one human being coming saying that these properties belong to me. Why? Because there was never any victim. There was never no. You cannot own a foreclosed abandoned property, not even a bank. Okay? So you guys allowing these fictions to come into the court. You're allowing these attorneys to represent the fiction without even applying federal rules, civil procedure, Rule 17, the name of the real party of interest must present themselves in court. Now, a couple of case laws that you all can have. United States versus Lovasco, you cannot have hate or any fiction challenging a physical, breathing, living human being. Okay? Sierra Club versus Morton, and I can go on and on that will support your arguments. Okay? You have to get in your study and on hearsay, proof and flop, and all this other flip-flop talk. Get into your studies. Study the procedures. You will win every time because you're going to beat them with real law. They cannot come in and claim something that they don't have their name on. An attorney didn't give you the money. The firm didn't give you the money. You don't have a contract with them, so that makes them a third-party intervener, which makes them a debt collector. All attorney firms are debt collectors, all of them.
could I? I mean, I don't want to take up too much time, but if I could just maybe read this to you real fast, and this is a declaration of the actual attorney, and you know, meet and confer with clients. Anyway,
good.
It says,
"Good, read it for me." I'll get the last. Go ahead.
Okay, I, Stephen H. Turner, do declare as follows. I am an attorney at law, duly licensed to practice before all courts in the state of California. I am a partner with Lewis. This is just a law firm, such and such, in this matter. I have personal knowledge of the following facts and, if called to do so, could and would testify competently as follows. Prior to filing of this motion, I timely met and conferred with the plaintiff in pro per, which is me, Tony Russell, on July 2, 2013. I sent Ms. Russell a letter explaining that her complaint lacked merit. In particular, I stated that my client, RJM Acquisitions, was a debt collector, collecting on a debt she owed to a creditor hired by RJM, and that RJM had performed a soft pull of her credit in connection with the collection of that debt, which is a permissible purpose under the Fair Credit Reporting Act. Plaintiff refused to dismiss her complaint, necessitating the present motion, and I declare the foregoing under penalty of perjury under the laws of the state of California and the United States of America. But this guy emailed me something on July 23rd.
Okay, wait a minute. Well, let's stop there.
Okay.
All right, because you wanted to read the declaration. So I'm gonna let the priest jump in after I say this. So the attorney declared, okay, his name was his name. He declared that he was an attorney. He declared that he was licensed as an attorney.
Ooh.
He declared that he had personal knowledge of the fact that he met with you or he conferred with you, okay? So he does have personal knowledge about that conversation. He acknowledged that he was a debt collector, working for a debt collector, and that they claimed that you owed a debt to someone else, okay? He said that he'd done a soft pull and he had a permissible purpose, which he doesn't. If you didn't apply for credit or insurance or services through them, they have no permissible purpose to pull your credit. So basically his declaration was about nothing. He didn't say anything. He didn't say that you owed a debt. He didn't say that he had personal knowledge that you received a debt or you received a loan or anything. He just did a declaration on his communications with you, said who he is, what he is, and who he works for. That declaration didn't mean anything. King,
okay.
Felicia,
well,
will you go ahead, brother, and give me your take.
Okay. On the title 28.
However.
Let the priest go, sister. Go ahead.
On the USC, sister, don't nobody have a license to handle. Don't nobody have a license in this country to practice law on a USC title 28, section 607. Also, he's an attorney which has a bar card. A bar card does not constitute a license to practice law. He's just a member of the Bar Association, and that's all. Also, if you would have applied Article 1, Section 9 on him, that means he has a title of nobility, okay? So, therefore, you can call his whole card on all of what he just said. You can subpoena his license. See, when they start talking that jibber jab, talk to me, you do a subpoena, do some, take them. And you can subpoena his license since he said he has a license to practice law. Also subpoena his license to handle securities because everything, that mortgage is a security. Everything they touch is turned into a security because it goes
okay,
to
let me,
the DTC.
Yeah, let me give a small disclaimer, King. That's a little bit advanced for most of the people that's going to be on this call. And I understand that there may be some justification for that, and I agree with you, but that's a little bit advanced when you start attacking the judges and the attorneys and their licenses. Look, I like when the attorneys show up. I make money with the attorneys. I don't care if they show. I don't care what kind of license, what kind of card, if they're a member of Gold's Gym or the bar. It doesn't matter to me. I'm going in to get a check. I'm coming back out. I don't care who's there. It's fun. It's good exercise. It's good legal exercise for me. So I don't advise her to go and you know, start asking attorneys, say, well, you can't practice. Let them practice. When y'all start learning what I'm teaching you and you start gaining the knowledge, you won't be intimidated by an attorney. You won't have any need to knock him out the box. And I understand what Priest is saying, and that's the way he would do it because he don't want him to talk. So Priest is going to be like, look, shut up.
I'm going to hit you with this. Okay, I'm going to hit you with 28607, and I don't even want you to open your mouth. I'm dealing with the judge, okay? Now, you have to be pretty advanced and skilled to know how to do that, if that's what you intend to do. But for the sister on the call, I don't think she would be able to do that. What I'm trying to tell you, sister, is that his declaration really wasn't nothing, and you should have put in an affidavit, and you should have put in a motion for summary judgment supported by an affidavit and say, look, I've gave them all opportunities to provide any admissible evidence of this alleged debt. They failed to do so. It is my understanding and my belief that there is no debt, that I didn't receive any loan from the entities named on the instrument. Okay, they are not around. It is my understanding and belief that these are debt collectors, that they never lent any money, that I don't have any contract executed or enumerated by any type of transaction that I participated in with them. I don't know this debt collector. We've never had intercourse commercially, and I move that the case be dismissed on a 12B6. You know, you can do something like that and put in an affidavit to that effect, all right? His affidavit didn't say anything. It didn't say anything. It just said he talked to you. That's all.
Right, but there's actually two declarations. There's one from the attorney and then another one from another person, and he does put in things that the debt was bought by RJM from another debt collector, and they have like the account number, you know, on there, an address, which was a P.O. box, and this was from back in 1998.
All right.
And I guess they bought the debt like in 2005.
Okay, so what? And I'm just saying this to you. Okay, so what? See, that's all subject matter, and you can't fall into subject matter. Okay, the first thing you want to do is, do I owe you any money? First thing you want to do, I owe you any money? Did you ever loan me anything? See, I can get all the story, and they're going to put together a nice story to get you to pay them. But my question is, did I ever apply for any services with you? Do I owe you any money? I really don't care how you got the debt. You could have filed it in my granddaddy's drawer. You could have bought a building that went out of business and they left some file cabinets with some applications in there, maybe some canceled checks. I don't care how you got it. You need to prove that I owe you a debt. And they can't prove that because the debt was not executed by them. It was executed by somebody else.
Exactly.
Who are you going to bring? How are you going to bring that somebody else? Other than that, you are doing what? You are doing nothing but speaking hearsay. That's it. You're telling me you acquired the debt, they mailed it to you, they sent it, they stamped it, they put some vinegar, some cheese, some mayonnaise on it. That's how I got it. You owe it to me. I mean, that sounds good. That sounds real fly. But what admissible evidence do you have to support this alleged debt? And where's the contract executed between me and you, not me and somebody else, between you and I?
Well, how were they able to even file a summary judgment? Because a summary judgment basically is saying that I guarantee you that there's tribal issues.
No, summary judgment. Well, they're saying there is no tribal issue, and you know what that comes from. And I'll say this, and I have to go to. I'll go ahead, and we're going to conclude the show. Summary judgment means you haven't done your job, because when a debt collector is filing summary judgment on you, that means you haven't really put up a defense or offense if you're the plaintiff. You haven't done enough to shut them down, because summary judgment should always be done by you if you're prosecuting your case correctly. So if you haven't done so, they're just like, well, Judge, you know, she's either some way indirectly admitted the debt or she hasn't clearly denied the debt, okay? So we feel like there's no need to go to trial. Summary judgment should be entered in our favor, okay, and some step that you missed. And this is often with us when we don't study and we really don't make this a focus, okay, because we need this focus because we are doing intercourse daily commercially. So we have to study these rules. We have to study these consumer protection laws. We have to know how to file summary judgment and declarations. And like the priest said, reading your declaration or affidavit into the record. Understand that attorneys can file all kind of pleadings that it can contain all hearsay, and they can do that all day long, and that's all that they do. They very rarely plead any facts. So if you can plead all day long, but when it comes down to it, you're the only one that should be able to provide the facts, because you're the only living witness to the transaction they claim that you executed. So your story is the only story that really counts. right? Because you were the only one there. If they say you got a debt 10 years ago, how do they know when they just came on the scene last year? So what happened the other 9 years is whatever I say, not what you say.
So, but, you know, we've gone into and did a settlement conference hearing and into the magistrate's chambers. They did want to settle with me, and they offered
settle,
me a settlement.
Settle how?
However,
what kind of settlement they offered you?
Money. They offered me money, but I denied it because they ran my credit like five times, and it's the case is
okay.
Like
so you owe $5,000 for each permissible impermissible pull.
$1,000. Yes, so it was five times. So correct.
So what did they offer you?
$750, and I didn't. I did.
Okay. Well, then you start. So that's a negotiation. Okay. Yeah, I'm not going to take $750. You got five impermissible credit pulls. That's $5,000. If you want to talk, you need to be somewhere $4,000 or over. Once you get them to offering you something, what you want to negotiate is that look. I'll take no less than $4,000. You need to remove those inquiries off my credit because it does have an effect on your credit score if you have a good amount of them. Okay, I need you to remove those inquiries, okay, and I'll do a settlement stipulation agreement with you for $4,000 or $3,500, whatever you want to say. If not, I'll continue to run up your litigation costs, and I'll continue to let the judge decide whether you had a permissible purpose. You're not a creditor of mine. I didn't apply for credit. Just because you're a debt collector does not mean you can invade my privacy and my proprietary information because you're trying to collect the debt, period.
Okay.
So they're going to offer you $750 or $500. You know, I do it all week. They offer you, I'm going to give you, you know, I'm suing for $10,000 or, well, we'll offer, you know, $1,000. I'm like, all right, well, listen, I understand that you're going to get billable hours, continue to come into me, so I'm going to let you go ahead and alleviate all that. Call me when you get somewhere around the $8,000 range, okay? You can tell them, I don't care what you tell your client, tell them you call me 20 times. I don't care how much money you get. At the end of the day, I need a check for $8,000 or we're going to proceed forward.
Right. So I heard you mention earlier that sometimes, like, if they get a summary judgment against me, then I could possibly owe them money. But it's beyond the point of a settlement because they had the conference scheduled until after the summary judgment hearing. So
you sued them, right?
Right.
Okay, so if they're getting summary judgment against you, that's not for any amount because they're not suing you on the debt. Summary judgments, I mean,
okay.
Judge, we just want judgment on the pleadings or summary judgment.
Right.
You don't need to go to trial. There's no issue of facts here. She loses,
okay.
We win. That doesn't
right.
mean it's going to be a money judgment against you unless they were any counterclaimed you or they were asking for money. Summary judgment just means
okay.
The case is over with. We don't need to go to trial, Judge. We just want a, we
right.
want a judgment saying that we don't owe you, that she don't have no
right.
case. All right.
Right. Okay.
All right.
Okay. So I just
all
need,
right.
so I just
so
need to, but I do need to actually answer that that summary judgment too. I can't like not let it go and not answer it. You know,
no, absolutely. If they file for a motion for
right.
if they file for a motion for summary judgment, you need to put in your own summary judgment or objection to summary
okay.
judgment on whatever grounds
okay.
that you deem is necessary or appropriate.
Okay.
But yeah, you definitely have to answer that. But when you do it right.
right
and you learn the rules of procedure, and you get these webinars that is out there that I've proffered and
right.
whatnot, you'll know how to go through those courses because
right.
I put them in levels. I don't give you everything at once. I step you from kindergarten all the way up
right.
to high school through college to the point where you can talk like myself and the priest about things and do other things
exactly.
that are advanced. But right now we got to learn how to do a summary judgment because you should have been the one doing summary judgment. My cases that I do, I file, they might do a motion to dismiss, okay? I'll go ahead and handle that. That'll get denied. They'll have to file an answer. And even before they file an answer, I'm already filing summary judgment. Why? Because I know my case is tight enough. I know it's pled properly, and I know they have nowhere to go.
Okay.
And I'm just saying, let's go ahead and give me my money. Give me my check. We don't need to be in here 6 months, 8 months. Let's go. I need a check. Go ahead, Judge. Give me that order on summary judgment supported by my affidavit, and it's a done deal. It should be done within
okay.
a few months or 4 months. Okay?
Right. In a year.
When you do it right. When you do it right now, that's
right.
how it'll be. Or you'll wind up entering into settlement talks immediately, which is most of the time
exactly.
what happens. I'll get settlement talks immediately. A few days after filing the case or as soon as the attorney gets there, like, hey, let's talk, man. All right, what you want to talk about? Well, you asked for 10. Look, I'll take 8. I'm going to just go on and I ain't got time. I got plenty others. I got eight. I'll take eight out of the 10, and we'll go home. You can play around, get your billable hours, you know, get whatever, tell your client whatever, you know, let them smoke your cigarette. But at the end of the day, I'm asking for no less than eight, or I'm willing to go to trial. Like Pre says, I'm willing to go to trial. I always tell them, willing to go to trial. Okay? Some punitive damages on the table. I'm just asking for eight out of the 10. That's not punitive damages. Okay? That's not actual damages, depending on what consumer protection law I'm using. So, you know, understand that. I'm asking you for eight out of the 10. You know, if you want to take that, or if you want to take your chance at trial, then you're going to be looking at a whole lot more.
Right. So basically what you're telling, you know, everybody on this call, you know, myself and everyone else that's on this call, is that, you know what you're doing before you do it. So what we need to do is we need to really study these, you know, codes and these local rules and things like that before you
Sister, it's not hard. Absolutely. But it's not – what I'm telling you is I'm not saying you have to go to lawsuit for 7 years. You don't.
Right.
If you take a few months out of your time and apply yourself as you did school or any other craft that you may be involved in, then you understand that it doesn't take much. You don't have to study every rules of civil procedure, just the ones that apply. Rule 17, you know, Motion 12B6, Motion for Summary Judgments, Federal Rule Civil Procedure 56. All right, those things you got to study, those that are going to be applicable to your case, how to defend a demurrer, how to defend a motion, how to do a motion to strike, how to do a motion for a more definite statement. You know, there's certain motions, there's at least a dozen of them and a dozen civil rules and local rules that you need to know, just a dozen or less.
Okay.
And you can go ahead and prosecute your case. If you're in small claims court, you have even less rules. Although the rules still apply, they're pretty relaxed in small claims court. So that's why I think everybody should start is in small claims court, okay? But definitely study before you sue anybody, all right?
Okay. Well, and one last question, real short. Now, what about, like, you know, because I want to get into studying criminal law. Where would you say to start doing that? Because I had an incident that happened to me recently, and I got a ticket at a for being in the park after 10:30 at night, and they searched
me. How much is the ticket, sister? How much is the ticket?
Well, I don't know. I have to go to court on this ticket February 24th, but, you know, it's just from being in the park after 10:30 at night, and that's against the law down here. And so I'm just wondering what should I do? What would you suggest to me to fight back?
What you should do if you were in a park, okay, and you were in a park illegally, and the time was clearly noted and placed somewhere in plain view that you shouldn't be in a park at that time, then you're in some sort of a violation of local statute, ordinance, city code, or something like that. Let's stop going to school and trying to learn about how to get out of a traffic ticket that's $50. Well, hell, you're going to spend more time trying to learn about that. Pay the $50 until you learn better. You follow what I mean? We don't need to start. We need to fuel inject this knowledge and just use it when it's appropriate. If it ain't, pay the $50. I promise you, if you start using what I'm teaching you, you'll probably pay a couple of those bills because you're not so strapped, okay? You'll probably be like, all right, I'll get that next week from the debt collector. I got the settlement coming in. You follow what I'm saying? I'm trying to uplift our people and our mindset to stop working on the petty things. We got some very intelligent Moors that's out there that's spending their life dealing with traffic court. I'm like, come on, are you serious? Can you apply those sciences to something else that's going to really get you some money? Okay, you got rid of a $50 traffic ticket. All right, great. I mean, I'm sure $50 is not hurting you, but if you're that hurting, man, come on. Okay, so you were in a place at a time that you wasn't supposed to. Go in there and be like, you know, I had no knowledge of, you know, that there is a time or cutoff time for me to be in the park. Yeah, they're going to search you. They're going to make sure you're not in there doing anything illegal. I apologize, Judge. I'm asking you to show me a little bit of leniency. You know, I can afford to pay you a couple of hours for the violation, but it wasn't intentional. And most of the time, that's all he's going to do. He's going to be like, all right, I'm going to go ahead and dismiss it. Or I'm going to just give you, you know, a $10 charge and, you know, in court costs of $30. And go ahead and pay for the experience or use the experience to quash your fear about going to court. Okay, and speaking for yourself, but do it honorably and respectfully. Use it for that experience alone, because there are going to be times you're going to go to court on a bigger scale where you're asking that judge to write you an order that will translate into some money or revenue for you.
and you need to be prepared
right.
to know how to do that
okay.
and move him in that direction.
Okay.
All right, sister, I'm going to have to cut it off here.
Okay,
we're going to cut off the show. Priest, if you got something to end off, again, we're having a webinar January 11th, 10 o'clock a.m. Saturday. Myself and Priest Elise Uwau, who has demonstrated on this show that he is definitely an expert in that arena. I think I've showed our listeners that I pretty much know what I'm doing, so we're hoping you're getting something out of it. Join us on the webinar. Priest, have you got something last to say before we end the show?
Yes, I want to thank you, brother, for having me on this show. I thank Yahweh for blessing us to come together collectively to teach people the wisdom, knowledge, and understanding on how to deliver themselves from poverty to riches, keep your mind focused on you and only you, and get rid of that fear. I'm so glad that you said that, Sharif, to go in these courtrooms and learn how to get the experience to get the fear out of their system. And I'm going to break down what fear does to what particular organ which causes them to shut down that part of their brain. But anyway, Yahweh and all the good people out there, I thank you and peace and blessing to everyone. Shalom Aleichem.
Indeed. Thank all y'all for showing up. We will see you next Tuesday, same time, same channel. For those of you that want to come to the webinar, we'll hear from you on Saturday. God bless. Have a good day and be peaceful.
I'm gonna show you when you're mine.